But because we're spreading all through, here we are, can we circle and start our meeting? I don't know, I'm suspecting, according to agenda, it can be a long meeting. But I do remember that some other briefings were held. So I'm hoping that it's not going to be that long, but we need to engage in each and every item. We'll come back from home. Those who are young in heart, they are not that much tired. I don't know about the girls and the boys. Is it parliamentary to say to the young ones they are boys and girls? There is a saying, this thing of you, of what is this thing that we are doing in the pools? I always hear that, how are the boys, how are the girls? I'm suspecting that you are members, you are not boys and girls.
If
boys is on us.
Gigi,
let's take this opportunity to welcome you again in our committee. You will tell us who is with you, hoping that we find us ready. I'm taking this opportunity to welcome Udiji and the entourage of Udiji. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to the honourable members of the Portfolio Committee.
Sorry, Udiji, I didn't even say that the members, they do adopt the agenda, or do they want to put something in the agenda and exhaust it. Honourable members, the agenda is in front of you. Honourable Malatsi.
Thanks, sir. I was just thinking that in light of your worry about time, that maybe we should get the first item to be the second and partial report, and then get everything else to follow after that. We have enough time on the partial report if we go out of time. Thanks.
Honourable members, the proposal. Any seconder? Honourable Chairman. Okay.
Yeah.
Honourable members, the agenda like that we are proposing an amendment to you, DJ.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, because most of the things we have dealt with previously, and we had invested a lot of time at the beginning of the committees, like to bring the committee up to speed, it will not be necessary for us to go into greater details about the current work we are busy with. It's a continuation of the foundations that were already laid and which are known. So in the jealousy of time, we would obviously not waste the committee's time with too much detail, but we'll highlight areas of success and areas where we have had challenges, and to then highlight how we're going to deal with the remainder of the target and the challenges there. So we would start first, if the Chair agrees with us, that we start with the feedback on the National School Sport and Friendship and briefing that there too. So you would recall that we held the National School Sport Championship from the 10th until the 16th of December in Pretoria. This chair was the last championship in the current format. The chair would remember that at the last meeting of the Portfolio Committee we attended here last year, we had briefed the committee that we were seriously considering looking at the rule delivery methodology for the championship, and the rules were quite straightforward and simple. We had the championship in 2014 with about 11,000 grants in 17 years, and with it, it was big by far, because you also recall that I made a comparison with the London Olympics, which was just about 3,500 athletes, and at 11,000, the championship has become cumbersome, and it was a championship that encapsulated both primary schools as well as high schools, and in all the formats. We have just ramped it up to 16 of the practicals only now in 2015, and we had also ramped it up to 4 Indigenous Games codes. We were still to add 5 more. And we have not yet had all provinces taking up their best in terms of all of the codes and age categories. And in cricket, we have only just introduced girls' cricket, and the boys' cricket was not yet in. And our calculations were that if every province was to take the available spot and available post, and they were to field teams and athletes in each and every age category, we would sit with a championship of 25,000 young people. And this, there are very few places that can really host a championship of that magnitude. And even now with Pretoria and Johannesburg, there has been a gross overstretch, because we have had to get children participating in schools as far as Amongst Ground, which is about 70 kilometers from Pretoria CBD, and we also had to have boxing and other related schools at Vets and in Johannesburg, and a few others in schools that were in Germany and in Irene. So the championship has become too big even by our standard to be able to comprehend and to manage. Nevertheless, it has been quite successful. Last year we have been able to confidently select the number of young players to add on to the children who receive ministerial sports for a reason, who are sent to sports focus schools. Of importance is that the HEDCOM last year recommended to the MINMAC that we move to a differentiated championship, and that we go to the issue of seasons, and we declare the seasons and align our calendars with the school sport code practice as well as with sports federation. To this end, this year is the first year, Chair, we are implementing a differentiated format, and with it, this coming weekend, we are having the primary and junior athletics championship, and followed the next subsequent weekend with the high school athletics premier championship. In this way, we are able to carry on average about 5,000 youngsters in each of the 2 weekends in 2 different areas. First one in Bloemfontein and the other one in Port Elizabeth. But it also affords other provinces that would normally not have the capacity to host a championship of the magnitude of what we have been doing previously to do so. But secondly, this new format also affords children the opportunity to play more than one group and to have multiplicity of performances and to participate in one area. Obviously, still early days. Our projections is that the increase will be at a premium of 30% of the cost of what it used to cost us to have one championship if we have it in 3 seasons. Come June, we will have the winter courts, which largely are the indoor courts like table tennis and others and volleyball and so on, and basketball. And come summer, we will have the summer championships, which will see the other courts like cricket, football, and netball and so on be played. And we are also looking at floating a swimming shoot as a standalone in September. And we're looking at that being a swimming only and a standalone championship. So long and short is that this year, 2016, will be the first year in which we see, if I may say that, we have 4 championships which build up into one, and children have a multiplicity of platforms to participate. I mean, this is the same. We still insist that at all our championships, the learners with special learning needs as well as learners with disabilities must be accommodated in all the 4 and in the main 3. So we have totally done away with the idea of a championship for foreigners with disabilities as a separate standalone thing. And we have always, since 2012, infused participation of foreigners with disabilities within the bigger championship. And we are now beginning to make some progress. We are seeing even more and more of the common model schools and independent schools beginning to join the government championship. And we are hopeful that by 2018, when we do the review, we would most likely by then, we think that the machine would have been a bit more of us to now consider collapsing the Isaka League into the government league. So this is where we are with the process, and we are looking at all these four championships, chair taking into account about carrying numbers of average 5,000 youngsters, like that the swimming one. The swimming one will carry about 1,800 participants, but all the other three will carry about 5,000 on average. This will now mean that we will actually carry much more than what we were able to carry in much more manageable sizes. Obviously, the only weakness with this new system is that the capacity of the provinces, of the federations and ourselves will be cut at the limit. Because staff that used to deliver on championship and work from January until they deliver it in December now have 3 months to work everything from local festival to district to provincial championship and national in 3 months. So we have already gone out to inspect the schools, what's happening. Indeed, we were very encouraged to see that the district as well as the provincial championships were being held by the provinces, and they are really trying amidst the difficult circumstances and the contract countries. So we will see how the first year goes. We have only made as results that we pilot this in 2 years, and only in 2018 we will then sit for review and see how it has gone. But having learned from the lessons of 2012 till now, we believe that we have gone a long way in as far as graduating to this new system. In fact, the world over, this is the system that is being applied. And so we started from somewhere, from zero base, and we gathered enough courage and capacity and lessons in the last 3 years. And we have grown the championship to where it is. Of importance is now our agreement with SASCOF, under the IFF, the International Schools Federation, which is hosting the International Schools Champions, World Schools Championship, every 4 years. So we are aligning the calendar. In terms of this new system, we will run the top school format chair, which is a format we have been using for some time. We will run it for 3 years, and every fourth year, we will run the Olympic type of championship, where individually talented youngsters are selected, not because they come from a good school or otherwise, but for their own merit, they are selected into making up the team. This team that comes every 4 years is the one that in the fifth year goes on to play the international competition or curriculum program. So every 3 years we have the top school championship. The top school format is cheaper for the country, we must say. That's the reason why we are not adopting the Olympic type of championship on an annual basis, because that will prove much more unaffordable. So we are aligning the calendar to allow. So as you may see, the next championship, international world championship for schools, is in 2018. So our view is that to send the first South African team in almost 20 years to this championship. We would in 2017 have, which is next year, an Olympic type of setup, so that the team selected therein is in time to go on and represent South Africa in 2018. I think that is the new format we've taken, and I try to compress much information in such a short space.
Thank you, DG. Do you want to engage with the presentation, or can DG continue with the briefing? Honourable Manet.
Thanks, Professor. I think he can continue with the presentation, since this one was a short one. It's going to be easy for us if he can continue.
Thank you, DG.
Yeah, thank you. We will move to the presentation on the African Union of the Council Region 5. Okay, again, I would not want to bore the... We have done the presentation in a very detailed manner, but if one reads it, they can easily follow. But what I would highlight is that the camps being the Committee of African Ministers of Sport, the camps 4, which took place in Cameroon, took a decision that we needed to recommend to the heads of states and governments of the AU for the dissolution of the Supreme Council of Sports in Africa. And subsequent to that, you do not have to present it.
Yes, we don't. Just a moment.
Sorry, sir. And it's lovely already, so.
Again, in the interest of time, while the administration sorts the issue out, is it possible while they're getting the copies and that's for this presentation, we move on to the next presentation?
Well, this is a brilliant idea, because I'm seeing that there is one copy from their site, don't have one. Let's try to skip this one, which is... What's on administrators? This is the first time that you are doing this to us. You know that the motto of this committee is that must get documents in time in order that when we're coming here, we've already read the documents. So I don't know if each department sent it and then it was asked, but we don't have as a members. It must not happen again, because we do like to read. You know, it's not your office, it's our office here, DJ. It's not your office. It's not your office. They've sent it, but... Yes, but it's not with us now. Honourable members, ask questions in the
first presentation whilst we're still waiting not to do anything. Anything that you want to raise on the first presentation? Honorable Radehomo, Honorable Bergman, I want that we must not just wait. Honorable member from Madadiel, Honorable Taiza, who sometimes will want to be my deputy chairperson.
I didn't want to speak though about the chairperson because I didn't want to speak in the position of speaking because I'm not competing with you. Sometimes then I will take off.
In that order, Honorable members.
No, I welcome that, but I'm worried in terms of the inter schools and the district competition. How are we going to structure that? Because it means it's going to be more work. The second point is that myself, I have had an opportunity to jump of the national championship in Pretoria. I went there quite. Now, what I still interested in obviously is district championships. So given that we are now decentralizing to sort of four, how are you going to streamline that really? Because given the school situation, this is not going to be more disruption, particularly in the township schools, given the challenges that we are in the township schools.
Thank you, Honorable Bachman.
Thanks, Sherman. With regards to the survey that I keep on bringing up that we should perform in, I think it was the DG that said the last time they did do some form of a survey. For me, it's just when you've got so many people that are involved in this course around one table, it's a great opportunity to get to understand what they think of the department in terms of how the tournament was run. But now, in addition to that, I'm wondering whether we shouldn't be asking even more probing questions as to how the league is, that particular league in which that school has come to represent. Are there any issues there? What are their successes? What are their weaknesses? And I think part of what we've got to try to do is replicate those that are working and expel those things that are not working. And this is the best time to do it because you've got people centrally now that hate it, and we could ask the probing questions. In terms of reporting to us, I'd like to see what are the five highlights of the National Sports Championship. Maybe it was that one of the outlying schools from a really poor school got to win one of the sporting codes. One of the weaknesses, to hear some of the five top weaknesses, that maybe it's the case of that in this province there's a huge vacuum in terms of league participation. And all of this would lead to a pattern in which we as a committee could become more productive. Because I often beat the drum that schools should be responsible for providing the people, and we should be responsible for providing the coaches. But somewhere along the line, I'm not sure how the pattern is emerging, and I think we as a committee would be able to then say, right, this is what's coming out from the national championships. It's no good just having one big Olympics for school goers. There should be some productivity coming out of it in terms of what we can take as patterns or requirements from our side.
Thank you, Honorable Bergman. Honorable Jain.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chaparin. I've been out trying to get more. The question is about, I want to know from the DJ, what is the status of the school sports in the world areas as it is now? And how are they supporting the world leagues? Because these people are complaining a lot, so I just want to get started on that. Then number two, I would like to know about the general time for the people of course without that have applied for the kids or children. Because it takes longer. So how long does it take for the department to deliver on the world area in terms of his application for kids concerned for the children? Then the last one, Chairperson. Under sports support program for the second quarter. So the issue is just indicating that they are self-supported in the network of South Africa.
It's for the next presentation.
Okay, so I'm coming like a laptop that knows most of it.
Please, hold you. Thank you so much. Honor. You know, DJ, when he's not in this committee, he's not always with us because the membership doesn't allow them. They didn't. Not in this committee. We don't have this luxury of laughing and to be happy. Honorable Malek.
Thanks, Chair. I just have a brief input. Just to find out in the department's assessment, what's wrong with the Northern Cape? Because from the table of matter there, they only got one. I mean, you know, surely there's something that, you know, from support or, you know, talent management or preparation of teams, you know, what the department's assessment. And secondly, to link to that, the question of do the teams that, you know, the general assessment about the readiness of all the teams that come in there. You know, because if you look at the depth from the top three provinces in terms of the medal, which are the instrument of measure in this regard, and then look at fourth place, the gap between third place and fourth place, it's huge. So in there, I mean, the one other thing that comes out, you know, is the level of competitiveness amongst the provinces. But could it be related to provinces' own under-preparation of teams coming in there? Because it raises a whole lot of questions about whether by the time they come to the championships, you know, is the level of competitiveness in each province or is it related to preparation of the actual teams, and also to check whether the department does, you know, in its post-analysis of the team, identify areas where it could provide support together with federations to say, you know, Northern Cape, if the only medal you got was in athletics, arguably 800 meters, what other areas can we provide support so that we can then have Portland coming out of in there. Again, this is cool championship, so it's not always the measure of, you know, the strongest athletes that come out, because many others could be outside of that circle. But also to check how do you best address those shortcomings, because that is the best opportunity for having proper support as that talent comes through the education system and goes through the tertiary level.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to highlight some concerns here. You see, when you're looking at this chart of final results, it tells you the most resourced provinces are at the top. And the poorest provinces, and then we together with the most corrupt provinces are at the bottom. So because corruption and poor level, they go, they take you down. Doesn't matter how much you have, if you are corrupt, you'll never benefit the people. So what I'm saying is let us try to fund the poorest provinces, because if you can see...
Excuse me, Honorable Member, I'm seeing the head. Honorable Manuel,
thank you, Chairperson. I don't want to disrupt the Honorable Mteka, and I have to support him on what he's saying, but I don't support what he's saying about the corruption, because I can see Mpumalanga province is number 6 here. And he's mentioning that this
low provinces, I think they are from five, they are corrupt. I think you must just remove the word corrupt because I'm from that province and there is no corruption on that province. I think he must, he's straightforward, he's right, he's corrupt on what he's saying, but he must just remove the corrupt provinces.
Honorable members, the opinion of Honorable Muteka is debated and immediately that Honorable Manana is raising that, so we must try not to do things like that. What this is a comedy that we can say. The word corruption must be qualified. When we are saying my Eastern Cape province is corrupt and I've just kept quiet, I don't think on that note that we can be hope here trying to investigate these provinces that are corrupt. I'm suspecting really this word corrupt of other provinces, we are feeling offended some of those provinces. Try not to do that, Honorable Member.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think somewhere she missed something. I never mentioned any province. And I know talk of the number five, number one. I said the bottom is good.
Honorable Muteka, we cannot discuss that.
Yeah,
please, let me guide the meeting. Please, switch off your mic. Honorable Muteka, we have said those provinces who are downers. So it's that, even if you didn't mention by names. So I'm saying let's not debate your input, and they are spoiling your input now, which is very, very relevant to the committee. Thank you.
Matthias, give us. Okay, let's talk about the top ones. The top ones, to me, they look like the main resource, the mainly resource of the rich provinces. So it seems the poor ones will forever be on the lower performance because they're not too well funded. So I think the distribution of funds should be right to the poorest ones, because otherwise we shall never achieve this equality in terms of sports beneficiation. And the other thing is there is one entity that need to be committed. Love Life. You see, Love Life is, I don't know whether it's in Limpopo or where. They are accessible. You can talk to them. There is another one, not towards South Africa, something like that. Those people are very difficult. That's why it's so difficult to organize competitions for netball and other things, because they will take you from one sport to another, and you will never get any answer from them. So where people are doing good, we must appreciate. So Love Life is doing good as far as I'm concerned so far. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mutem. I'm proposing that DG must respond in order that we must get to another briefing. Thank you, Honorable Members. To you, DG, your turn.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for the question. Honorable Chief, with the issue about the impact of this process on the township schools and on other schools lies in the scheduling. I think our key interest is to align the calendar of the federation with what we are doing. If we do not do that, then the impact is going to be really negative. And I think we spent about 2 years trying to achieve this. There has been gross resistance from the federation to align in this way, and our principle of one championship, one country was very important from that point of view, because the championships at which the federations issued the colors were the ones where they made parents pay to participate in such championships. So if you were poor, then your child couldn't potentially, even if they were talented, get colors. And the championships were so segregated to the extent that we saw that they were largely frequented by affluent schools as well as children from affluent areas. And with the government geek and with us insisting on the scheduling and making sure that they do away with the so-called independent championships and to align to it, that was a long and a very protracted process that took a time. But ultimately, with the incentives we are now giving and money we are refencing within the SUSCOT funding federation, it is allowed, because in truth, if you ask me, the only reason why people insisted on this parallel championship is that the executive made money out of this. If I can give you an example with African schools and netball, their championship, which they call all ages and all girls all ages, they normally hold it in Margate in next to Devon. Last year, which was their last championship, or was supposed to be their last championship, it cost each parent 3,500 rands just for entry fees, and the parents there to transport the children to Margate. So, in a championship that size, the 3,000 each of about 4,000 girls across primary and so on, the executive of school netball was making a lot of money, and there has been a lot of behind the scenes fighting, and I'm sure I've briefed the committee over and over when I came here about the interventions we're making among federations, and we're using the new funding framework as an instrument to coerce everybody into line. We are saying that the parent federations must take the responsibility for school sport, meaning that Netball South Africa can't fold his hands and say, that's cool, we have a school's coach, Fractal School's Netball, they must see to finish and we don't care. Because that's where the feeder is. So we are giving money over to Netball South Africa, and it has to get all its structures. Because they recognize what body in terms of the law is Netball South Africa, not necessarily South African School's Netball. And this we have a big fight with basic education about, because basic education still believes that it must continue funding the school structures directly to the exclusion, and that's why they could easily ignore us, because they knew that if we don't want to pay, basic education will pay, and then somehow miraculously, when we come to a government lead and a government championship, basic education says it doesn't have the money for it, but it issues money to the school structure. So it has taken us a long time. Since 2012, in the Grand National Task Team, we've been taking resolution after resolution to say that we need to align and to strengthen the calendar so that the benefit would be felt equally among township schools as well as affluent schools the same. And that ultimately the independent schools championship, which honestly, if you were to ask me, is the only good thing happening that that's thing we have now. And so if we took a decision in 2012 to collapse it, I think it would have been a big mistake. But we allowed them to run a parallel league of about 3,000 schools, so, because these are private schools largely, and a few model schools are part of that league. But our agreement with them was that we will await the government league to be a little bit more robust, and when it is okay, and the standards are okay, then we will allow that which will collapse into the government league. But what we did not do, in 2012 we were faced up with a dilemma. Some schools who play that league, like Battery Kloof, who was poor, in that league, they are underdogs. They are beaten by everybody, St. Albans and whoever beat them up that side. But once they have been taken out of the early rounds of that league, they then come to us and say, we want to play your league. And we were faced with a dilemma, what do we do with these schools that come out of that league and say, do we put a barrier in between all that? And we said, no, rather, let's show goodwill for those schools that say they want to play. The levels of participation are not the same. The playing field is not like that. And indeed, when they come to that, you will see that what they're close in netball, it gets beaten in the first round in the other league. But when it gets to the government league, it wins all the games and wins the title all the way. And there's no doubt about it. So more and more of those schools have been opting into our league and playing this side, particularly the ones that don't perform that well the other night. So what this has created has heightened the level of participation in the government is, and it has made it a bit much more robust. But now, with this new format, that idea of an opt-in is no longer an element, because those leagues of independent as well as the government league are now running parallel. We are now on their format, you know, same thing. So they no longer have the choice of opting in, because when you lose that side, you have lost the opportunity to participate this side, and this league has already taken place as well, and it has already completed. So this is where we are with the whole process. But with it, the important thing, like, take rugby as an example. This just created a week will happen exactly the same time as the government league, and actually it's happening at the same place, in the same vicinity. So gradually we are moving towards full integration, and I think most of the federations have now accepted the wisdom that we're actually wasting money. The government league as well as the federation's efforts must be all combined, and we must work on the same platform and for the same good of the country. So I think that's what we are trying to do, and I think the idea of scheduling and alignment is key and critical in helping us achieve this. Honorable Dachman, honestly, the issue of the study, last year when this thing was raised, we had attempted to engage UNICEF again to see if they can do the study. Honestly, we were late, and equally, we also tried with HSRC to say, can they work with us? They said we were late, but we must put in a proposal in January for the assessment. So this one with athletics, we have lost out. But we are more confident that the league in September and in December, we may partner with the SRC to do the survey and to see what outcomes are there. The last one we did, honestly, was the 2012 full survey with UNICEF. I believe Solo still has the results of the UNICEF survey. And then it was very positive. We took actually some of the key essential lessons. You'd see that we have now infused the whole idea of edutainment, because that was one of the big things that came out of the first survey. A child who comes with the provincial team and comes in, they play in the first round and the school gets eliminated. They have a full week to stay in the championship, and what then do they do during that entire period? And so we began programs on parallel lines. We had seminars with Love Life. We had all sorts of things happening there. Children could be introduced to new sports and new coaches, and they could meet sporting champions. And there's been a whole host of lessons we took out of the initial survey. But I think it's something we will still work towards. The issue you are raising is very important to us about us providing coaches and the school providing pupils. We agree with you fully. But you would recall that I repeatedly reported to this committee that we were struggling with finalization of manuals being accredited and the training of coaches being finalized. Finally, after we had tried individuals, we got Peter Msimane at the committee about that. We got Peter de Villas. He did one module and he was offered a job by the University of Western Cape. He decided to leave. Now completed. We decided to work with institutions. So this far, we have funded SCORE for the last 3 years. And SCORE is Sport Coaches Outreach Program. It's based, it's an NGO based here in Cape Town. They have completed their work. We worked very hard with the CAPFIT at SCORE to get all their modules accredited. They have been accredited to provide training for level 1 and 2 of the SACO coaching framework. They are still to work on level 3. This year was the first year we have given them sufficient money. We gave them an initial 7 million allocation to be able to train 5,000 teachers. And the last time I indicated that we need to train about 18,000 teachers a year, but the money we have is just enough to train 5,000. And we had been reporting to this committee. We've been training about 388. The 1 year we really outdone ourselves was when we trained 887, I think, in 2013. So we have been struggling with the issue of training of coaches and the provision of teachers or coaches in schools, but we have made a breakthrough now with SCORE. And while 5,000 is too little, but from the baseline we come from, is quite huge. And in the space of 20 years, at this rate we are going, in fact, millions of investment, we would have a significant pool, but we will not close the ratio and the gap of 1 is to 40, which is a norm we have set for ourselves, comparative to international standards and norms. And I've reported to the committee that while countries like the UK and Australia, UK is at 1 is to 43 and Australia is 1 is to 47. We are at 1 is to 890. So you can imagine for every 817 participants, we have only one technical official as compared to the other countries. So we don't have coaches, that's the truth, and we do not have the money to train enough coaches. But we are making a dent with the latest results we are having. And so that will take us significantly a long time to address that ratio. But the impact we are making is almost felt immediately by schools in rural areas and so on, because we prioritize teachers in the rural areas. Honorable Chaisa, I'm linking this to the question you raised about the rural areas and the status of schools from there. Okay. In truth, the majority of the schools that registers for the league are in rural areas. But the majority of those that participate are in urban areas. So there is a disjuncture between registration or the intention of the school to say we want to participate and their actual participation. And this we call barriers to participation in sport, and we have characterized and looked at all those barriers, key amongst which remains the issue of limited funding of these schools, meaning that the schools themselves are in no position to start or to get to play sport. Secondly, lack of access to facilities, as well as lack of access to playing attire and so on, has been a problem. We have done a number of measures to mitigate against this. Even if we wanted, honorable members, we will never be in a position to give all schools in the country all the attire as well as equipment. Right now, the president has adjourned our minister that ourselves, together with provinces, we have to provide on an annual basis at least 6,400 schools with equipment and attire. We then went and sat with the treasurer and said, with what the president is saying, will you give us additional money? Because the only money we have, members would remember that on average our target used to be 500 schools, and we're exceeding by going to about 600 something a year. Now, the issue is the quality of delivery. If I were to be asked, honestly, honorable members, that in each and every school I just give like one kit and one wall, I'm sure I can reach 6,400. But is that what we really mean? I think we have to look at the quality of delivery, that because chances are that once you have gone to a school, you're not going to go back to it again in about 7-8 years. This is the truth of the matter. We have 24,000 schools, which needs all of them to be supported. So we're not going to go back there anytime soon. And on a rotational basis, it's going to take us far longer to get back to get to those schools. So if we come to them, they must really feel the impact that they're there. So the package we deliver to each school has to be significant. But it proves them beyond doubt that for say in the next 6-7 years we will play, you know, and they must feel that government has delivered. So this has been the context and the indications. But after a bit of wrangling and fighting, the treasury convened the meeting with the presidency and ourselves and everybody, and we sat down and we then agreed that we will revise down the target of 3,000, and the president will be consulted, of 6,400 to 3,000. And then we will also have to reprioritize some of our own programs. So we have done away with some of the programs like the Think Sport Seminar and the Think Sport Journal, all of those type of things like the Little Green Book. We've done away with all of that and took the money and prioritized it so we can provide better access for schools. We have been criticized by the academic staff. I took a very terrible decision to do away with African, and we'll only have African once every 4 years. But with the money, we must channel to buy equipment and so on. So as you see our ETT and everything, you see that we have revised most of our programs. We have done away with most of them to try and pave way to meet this higher target, but still without compromising the quality of the delivery. So school sports in rural areas is a big challenge. All of us admit, but you will see that almost all sports equipment and attire we are now using is in rural schools, as well as all the facilities we are rolling out are in rural schools. So our commitment to WALNUT is unshaken. And we have also insisted on the norms and standards for the RCD program, that all schools to be built must have netball as well as football facilities as a start, to aid in breaking the barriers to participation. How long does it take us to deliver equipment and attire? But it's a long, tedious process. That is with any government program. We plan. We don't receive electric today because you see in our budget, we don't keep a small kit aside and say, when a request comes, we'll take out the money and go buy and give. We don't work like that. We already plan. And so as like now, the president and the minister have agreed that we have to deliver to 3,000 schools. We ask the provinces to nominate the schools, and we look at whether those schools are in rural areas and they are already registered to play for the league. Because if you are not registered on the government league, we're not going to give you, because we are actually saying, because we don't want to avoid the situation we saw in 2011 and 2012 when we were doing verification of whether the kids and everything have arrived at school. And when we get there, we find that a year later, the principal still is looking the kids in the suburb, and the children have never played. So you are such indication to us to say, I want to play, is you are tipped to most of the things to follow. So register first, and then we can talk. So schools that are not registered are removed from the list of beneficiaries, and those that are registered and are in rural areas are prioritized. Once we know that, we also look at their registration. What did they say they want to register for? So that we don't deliver netball equipment to a school that says, no, we actually want to play both. So that we can match like for like, and we can send the equipment, the right equipment and the right attire to the same thing. We also need to know, is it a primary, is it a high school, the age and the age categories they want to participate in, and we also want to see, therefore, that will determine the sizes and the needs. We want to look at the size of the school itself. So potentially, how many teams can it have, and all of those type of things are essential in helping us make a determination. Once that has been done, by September, October, all the analysis is done and everything is locked, then we issue the orders. And the orders are then done properly so that it can be prepackaged for the schools. And then come December, the deliveries begin. And then you only can start getting the equipment early January. So that's how the system works. It looks too tedious, but it is the only way to do it better in an accountable manner, because the AG is taking us to talk about this issue. The Auditor General wants to see it's no longer enough for our supplier to show the delivery notes. So now the AG say a school that receives the equipment must actually have a list of the equipment that they have received. On a separate sheet, they must put their school stamp on and the principal must sign that, yes, this is what I have received. So you can imagine how tedious the administration behind this is concerned. But we can't do it haphazardly. We can't receive a letter and then say, yes, we're going to do it or no, we're not going to do it. So often the requests that come to us are the ones that the provinces have not necessarily nominated those schools. So the key issue for us is then to say, how do we induce the remainder of the schools that have come forward? Often we don't want to disappoint the schools that come on their own to say, please help us. We always try to find a way of accommodating them in the bigger scheme of things, but it takes long. Malasi, what's wrong with Northern Cape? I'm going to link this with what Honorable Mudega says, which is very correct. I think the issue of Northern Cape is a sorry state of affairs, because if we can replace the challenges with it, is the equitable share. It's the formula our country uses to share the budget across everybody. So Northern Cape has a terrible set up, in the sense that economically it is devised and raises very little revenue on its own. And therefore, because it raises little revenue, Treasury gives it back a small share, because your contribution to GDP dictates how much you're going to get back. Secondly, it has a smallest population size. And so, because there's fewer people to serve it, it gets the limited resources available. But then, this is where it gets complex. The province of the Northern Cape alone takes 3% of South Africa's landmass, which means that there are vast distances between the so-called houses.
or urban areas of South Africa. Because then really towns, for instance, if you go to them and you meet them, places like Carnarvon and Kamloops and all of them, you go there, you see them, you see the things I'm raising. And you follow the Orange River and all the towns that are dotted along the Orange River to the coast in the Northern Cape. What you see is sheer poverty. And there's no hope unless there is a direct intervention. So what did we do? If we only followed the equitable share, as the treasury requires us to follow it, then our budget, we should be giving Northern Cape annually about 8 million ourselves for this. And other smaller provinces like Mpumalanga, the Eastern Cape, Limpopo and so on, will all suffer because they will get the smallest share. So what we did was to agree with the treasury on a baseline of 20 million. And we are not applying the equitable share as government rule is applying it. I think we are one of the few departments because when I became DG in 2011, 2012 early, we were already engaging the treasury around this. But what it meant was that if you were a child, a South African child, and you happen to be born in the Northern Cape, then sport is not for you. It's for children born in the richer provinces or in the more affluent provinces, which for me was unpalatable because those children too are South African. So solidarity of tadpoles is important. After a long debate with the provinces, the bigger ones obviously, the ones you see there with the bigger headcount, were the ones who had the most problem with the new solution. And I'm saying so because I know Mr. Dia was the CFO of Gauteng at the time. They didn't like the idea at all, but now that he worked nationally, he sees the wisdom of what we were doing. Because the important thing was that we took a baseline to each and every province will get 20 million as a start. So from the TT available in our budget, about the almost a billion we have, we will deduct 20 by 9 and give each province their 20 million first. And only after then, we then subject the formula on the remainder of the amount. We subject the equitable share. And after subjecting the equitable share, we then do the extraordinary. The two largest provinces, Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal, we then cut 1% of their budget and we give it to Northern Cape. And this formula we have been practicing now for 5 years. And it has worked wonders because I can tell you that since then, the Northern Cape is able to participate in all national championships. Secondly, the Northern Cape has begun producing some national champions. Even in indigenous games, a tournament they never participated in because it was a luxury for them. Since then, they've consistently participated, and for the first time, they won the Bishkokis gold medal. This medal you see here of the Northern Cape is a fat F. They have never won anything at any national championship before. So this shows that the intervention he made is beginning to work and bear fruit. And that the efforts we have put in the Northern Cape are beginning to pay off. But the biggest success story here is the Free State, which used to be at position 6 and was hovering at 6-7 all the time, being the second most poorest province in our country. But that it has gone further to where today is at number 4 in school sports. Shows that what they can do with just the investment in school sports and the prioritization of what we are talking about. They are still terrible if you look at the other national championships and other things, but they invest the bulk of their money in schools. And even their so-called equitable share, which they get from their province, they spend almost all of it in school sports. So that just shows you what prioritization is. So typically, provinces that are more affluent, are more urbanized, have better access to facilities, have a bigger budget and so on, are the ones that are dominant. And that is why we introduced the other formula in that regard. So I think that is the whole point, and I believe I've covered what Honorable Motega has raised. And thanks for the commendation of the Love Life. This committee in the previous used to fight a lot about the issue of Love Life. But since we engaged with the Treasury and we had agreed that Love Life no longer does its own things, and we did away with the Love Life game, and all sort of things, and we force them to streamline their efforts and piggyback on our APD and the priorities set by the department. I think now we have seated like hands in glass, and we are working very, very well with them, and there is better support by us and by them, and there is mutual benefit on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Members. I'd love to have follow-up questions. We must be brief, because the next presentation, I'm expecting, is the one that you wanted, that we must start with the Kotanda report. Because you see, we have taken our own time. We are right. We see that seemingly today we'll be taking the whole day. But DJ, I'm happy about the questions and the response, but you know, DJ, maybe you'll be giving me a name called Nick. When you are talking like this, it takes me back with the treasure. The reality that this department has got a very little budget, and together we need to fight this problem of pressure that sometimes they don't want to listen you first and come to the committee not listening to us. But you are telling us it's an achievement of this 1 billion, and I'm suspecting that will be emphasize this thing of this department that we cannot do more. If you were not taking them, if the president was not pronouncing what he pronounced, they were not going to listen to us and to you. Until now that the president must intervene, will be happier if even on what you are saying, treasurer must listen to us in the problem of image. Because we can't do administration for 1 billion and doing programs with 1 billion. Now we're getting there, DJ. We'll be supporting you, and you must support us when you're fighting, as they are supporting us. That the money that is responsible for the MIG is misused, is funneled to other programs. I'm happy that now there is a 1 billion who's going to come to our coffers. DJ, is government can run leaks, and is there anything that we have said that, or is saying that there is one federation per sporting coach? How are we going to match with these two? When I'm listening, I don't get exactly how are you going to do, and you have explained, but to my mind, I was thinking that we have said government cannot run leagues. And then we said there is one federation per sporting code. And then if you can clarify the other statement, it was just telling you that we are still going to ask FEDA to come back to our committee. One to listen to themselves, because on that day we have said we are not having what we are giving in our department, and then can go and rethink. That's the last word of this committee, in that we have told our department, we have said that we are going to give us not what is due for us, and then now if they are agreeing on that, take that chance, DJ, and they will support you. But won't support you not better if they are not doing what they have just told us. Thank you, DJ.
No, Chair, I must clarify so that I don't create a terrible perception. The 1 billion I'm referring to is our normal budget. It's just below a billion. I must clarify. It's not additional money that the government is going to give us. They have already made it clear that they will give us no additional money. The only new money they have given us is 6 million to appoint technical people in facilities. and to expand our facilities unit because of the deal, I know the committee doesn't want at all. And that deal is the one where the Treasury and COPTA agree that they give us, we run pilot with them. They give us 300 million, but the money doesn't, the 300 doesn't come to us. We sit with COPTA, but we supervise it and we have projects, facilities projects, in the poorer municipalities across the country. And they want to see whether this model we are proposing will work or not. And they are saying, yes, 300 million, we have ring-fenced it in COPTA. It's not going to be transferred to the municipalities. It will sit with COPTA. Use both, come up with the projects for this 300 million, manage it, run it, COPTA will pay. So there is an issue of trust, you must remember. So, but we are not after the money in the sense that we just want to grab our hands on it. We want to prove that this model works and that when money is centralized and not given us little 15% here there, because right now the challenge is all members know that money is not being used for sport facilities. But with the 300 million, we want to start. How many programs have we allocated here? How many? 42 projects. Out of 30 municipalities across all the 9 provinces. So we are going to spend that money, or rather COPTA will spend the money on our behalf on the approved project. We will immediately, now in April, advertise for posts, new posts. We are hiring engineers and all sorts of things who will now do the role of supervising contractors and everybody and make sure that we deliver quality facilities and on time. I think that is the whole point. And when the 300 is spent and spent well, and we have delivered good facilities and we have proven the model, we will next year fight for that 300 to be expanded and to be increased. And as time goes on, we keep on fighting until the whole 2 billion or so sits with COPTA, and later we will fight that transfer to us. You know, so, but we realize that as long as we are trusted and we are a small department and people raise genuine concerns to say, you have never run a billion, you have been running 880 million, all of a sudden you want 2 billion, what are you going to do with it? So at first we offered that, okay, don't give it to all of you to us, give us a little to start with and then we'll go on. By year 5 we would have scaled up to 2 billion. But there's still trust issues and there's still a gap. And people are asking, why are we fighting for this money so much? What do we want to do with it, you know, and so on. So it's okay. If it will win over the hearts and minds, because this battle chair has been raging on since the Polokwane conference. And it is still not resolved. And money is still not coming and facilities are not being built. So we have had to take a compromise route, unfortunately, because otherwise it was either the 300 or we have lost the debate. They will not give us the money. And no one was willing, even at a higher echelon, to perhaps the Treasury to give us all the money we want. So I think that's where we are today with it. We will start when the municipal financial year starts, which is June, unfortunately not now. When they kick in June, that's where the project starts rolling out. And so we will ready ourselves because our tranche of the 6 million comes in April. It gives us April to June to hire the right people. And come June when the money is available, then we hit the ground running. I think that's where we are with it. It's only 300 million. It's not going to come to us if we fit with COPTA, but that's where we are. The issue of the code structures and the federations, look, Chair, the truth is the recognized board body, which is the federation, it's an authority for all of sport of that code. Whether it's played by old people or in schools or by children or by whoever, for all clubs, for all leagues, for everything. So SAFA is responsible for all of football. So SAFA may have a choice to say, we want the SAFA to work in schools on our behalf. We will give them money, but they must account to us. That's their choice. But the problem was that previously the federations folded their arms and said SAFA must be to finish with schools. SAFA did his own thing, SAFA did his own thing. They hardly even talked to each other, no one accounted to each other. Often or not, even SAFA would become a law unto itself. I'm just using it as an example. But with our new system, I think the parent structure must take responsibility for all the substructures. And the substructures must account to it. Some federations say, we don't want the substructure for school. Take hockey. Hockey says, on our board, we have a director who's responsible also for schools. And the CEO and the management will then have to deliver this. Cricket has just done the same thing. They used to have schools cricket. And when I met Harun Lohan, the CEO of cricket, he said to DG, I hear you and I accept. We have been neglecting this space. But if you say, I must take the money, give it to that structure, then I can tell you this thing is never going to be done at the rate it's supposed to. It's only when I take it seriously as CEO that it will happen. And I'm going to propose to my board that with the money you're giving us, they must put this thing as part of my performance agreement as a CEO, and I must account for it. I don't have a problem. Those people of school cricket, I'm going to call them. I'm going to offer them jobs in cricket South Africa. They must work for the organization and report to me and deliver, so I can force them to do the things you say must be done, which I felt was a correct attitude. And they have moved on to do that. Others have different formulas. Table tennis, say, well, whoever becomes president of table tennis schools will sit on our board as ex officio, and schools will be a spending agenda item for all our board meetings, and the person must report to us what they are doing and so on. But we will never transfer money to that as a, or to the schools. They must tell us their program, everything. We will pay on their behalf, because ultimately we are the ones who must account for the money. So there is a mixed bag. The formula is not the same, and we are not imposing on federations what they need to do. We are saying to them, the thoughts are not the same. The footprint of many codes is not the same across the country. So whichever that system works for your federation at this age, communicate to us what you prefer, and then we'll be happy. There are others like SAFA, who are today saying, we no longer need a SASFA. And they went to Mpumalanga for a conference and said, SASFA out. SAFA as a structure must now take over even schools. Must monitor, and as part of their community leagues and everything, they will now start a new unit in SAFA. This will be staff members of SAFA who will be responsible for schools. And for now, they have agreed on a joint national task team to have a joint representation, meaning there's a representative of SASFA and there's a representative of SAFA who sit there. SASFA is crying foul, it's complaining, it's saying no, they are not doing it for the right reasons, they are doing it because the president of SASFA had contested, the president of SASFA had a conference and lost, now they are being punished. But you see, we can't be embedding ourselves into fashions. We have to respect the federation model if it followed its own procedure. Because they came and said that they want to do away with SASFA, and we asked, first give us your plan. Once SASFA is out, what are you going to do and how are you doing time to go about it? They went, did the plan, came back and said, here's our plan. We then said, well, you don't have a proper resolution to do what you say you must do. If you want to do it, you must follow your own constitution and go to a conference. And they had a special conference in Mpumalanga. And they passed that resolution. So were you there, or was it only? They passed the resolution in our presence. We were there. We were there to observe that they are doing the right thing. And indeed, the regions, all of them, voted in favor of doing away with SASFA. So once they have gone through that and notify us formally that they are now doing away with SASFA, it's not up to us to fight for the existence of SASFA. I'm sure it must be understood. No matter how much this SASFA writes letters to us, the truth of the matter is that the current federation, which is the recognized world body, has taken a resolution to say, the only thing we must regard is that as a consequence of that, school sport has been suffered. This is what we must do. And we must insist on holding them accountable to delivering on school sport. This far, they haven't failed us. Last year's December championship was the first one where they were in charge, so to say, to deliver teams and do every other thing. They haven't appointed us. So I don't think that we should be fighting over it, and we must continuously monitor the situation. But that's how the system is intended to work.
I'm suspecting that we've touched so many things, and if we can do a follow-up, we cannot get to a second order, because
that I'm sitting here as a chair. I've got follow-up questions, but for the sake of the time, we do appreciate all the pilot. Even on that day, we're not saying that we are not pleased about that 300 million, but we're saying that it's not what you want. And until 5 years we're still here, we'll call Treasurer on a follow-up question on this call. That quarter on that day, they couldn't even account on the money that is used in Free State. And we even asked that anyone has been taken through the consequence of not using what they've used. They couldn't even answer. So I'm saying they cannot trust our department. Was Bukhopter didn't respond here when they were saying if the state has done well, but they cannot account for. And we are always accounting, we're always having clean audit report. That now they cannot give us billions, what they're the lowest and in the share of the money as this department. You always giving us information and we deal with this information. And we are happy, honorable members, about this 300 million, but it's not what we want. But we cannot say, take your 300 million, we'll be irresponsible. But this new fund that everybody is fighting not to be given to Usport and Repression, we won't relax and rest until we get what we want. Honorable members, with due respect, let's get to the second presentation. If we have follow-ups on what UDG just said, I'll be giving honorable members the time if we have spare time. But in reality is that we are not happy about the undermining of the department that's supposed to do marvelous things, especially in the rural areas. We are suffering when we're not seeing what is doing well, and as if this department cannot do what is expected to our rural areas. That's why this department said that it was still reinvesting. It was shown people that they can do more, but without funds, that funds are doing other things. We cannot relax and rest. With due respect, honorable members, the first DG second quarterly report, third quarterly report. So let's wait with UNESCO and the Africa, whatever. Let's start with this in order that if we have time, enough time, we must do other follow-up questions. Thank you, DG.
Thanks, honorable members. I think
this
was really good on the third quarter.
It has already been overtaken by events of what we are dealing with now, as we are closing the books and we are finishing off on our fourth quarter back. Because the problem is that the quarters always come long after. But let me also preface what our presentation and what the CFO will present on the financials of the third quarter. Also, I like that.
Can you assist if you can have an understanding why it's always like this? I know it's a question of treasure, but how can we be influential as parliamentarians or as committees that it must not be like this?
Chair, I don't think it's possible. I don't think so. I really don't think it's possible. I think that the biggest influence the committee would have is at the level of the AGP is in influencing what then goes into the AGP, which is what is going to be reduced to operational plans of our units and divided into four parts. Because that's exactly what we do. And you would see that the temporary issues is normal, particularly for finances, to say by end of first quarter it must be at almost 25%, 50%, 25%, and 100% by then. But with us, it doesn't really work that way. You see that when we start, we are a bit slow.
and we take time to warm up. By second quarter, we are hot. By third quarter, we are the sun now. We are scorching heat. But and then third quarter, we now wrap up, and we are fourth quarter, we have so limited activities, and we focus on our own inward processes and fixing our books and so on. So our patients will never follow that norm, as you think it is, because the bulk of our programs are in the head court. Now it will balance out a little bit because of the championship. The figures will no longer be that low, and a sharp spike, and it will be a graph which grows steadily, but again, still, the largest of our programs would still happen in the third quarter. So, because it's summer, that's when most of the sports take place, doesn't some of the leagues we are supporting take place and so on, and our expenditure and our targets are reached, luckily in the, and most of the administrative targets are reached in the fourth quarter. So it's not the same chair, and there's very little we can do because the law requires us, the PFMA says at the end of the quarter, and then 30 days thereafter, we have submitted the quarterly financial statements to the auditor, to the treasury. We must have done the in-year monitoring reports, and we must have submitted them, and only then can they be reviewed and so on. Once that has been done and that's done, only then they are ready to be tabled here at a quarterly report. It's always looking backwards. But it affords the committee the opportunity to then say, tell us with this what we are seeing, how are you intending to address it in the next quarter or in the subsequent quarters. But that's about, you can only redress. But proactively, if you want to change something, it's at the level of the APP. If you want to suggest new programs, what, and then we can debate whether what is being suggested is affordable or not. But I think it is at that level that we deal with it. Okay. So, Chair, like I said, we will look at this within that context. If we move to the second slide, better indicate the process we follow and so on. The most important thing I have to highlight about this, and which will also impact on the CFO's report on the financial of the third quarter, is primarily the fact that for the first time in our department, we have asked the Auditor General to do a preliminary audit. We haven't done this before. We have always finished the full year, done our books, finished, and cleaned up what needed to be cleaned up, wait for the AG comes, audit to give us the audit report and go, and then we do our thing again, same thing. So this time around, we asked the AG to the preliminary audit. So we have already paid the AG, we have done a 6 month audit. So the first 6 months have been audited and finished and closed and done. And two quarters, so first quarter and second quarter, have been audited and finished. And the good news is, in the first half of the year we are in now, the financial year we are still in, ending 31 March, the AG has already given us a clean audit for the first 6 months. So we are working now with him for the other 6 months, the remaining 6 months. So which means second and fourth quarter. Unfortunately, they are now auditing the third quarter. They will move when we finish this fourth quarter. So with this system, we are likely to finish our annual report and the auditor financial statement well ahead of the August deadline. So, which is a good thing. Many departments don't want the AG anywhere near them until the financial year ended. But we are a bit more confident now. We are a bit more robust machine, a lean machine in our department to know that is the greatest thing we can do. So as we look at the other things, I think members must keep it in the back of their minds that we have already began work in this regard and on reviewing the air under review. Let me indicate that in the third quarter there were 4 targets that were to be achieved during this quarter under review, and two targets were achieved and two were not. If we look at the targets, the one that was achieved was on the training in human resources, and the one that was not yet achieved was marketing and communication, the client satisfaction survey. I must indicate that
right now, that survey is being undertaken. Sulu and the chief director of communications are busy with the survey, and it will be ready before the end of the financial year. Again, the issue of the performance information in quarter three, here we have set a target against 50% and we have achieved 55%, and this will increase significantly almost beyond the 90% in quarter four. In program two, Active Nation, there were seven targets to be achieved, and five targets were not achieved and two were achieved. If we look at the targets that were achieved, it was on the active recreation programs and campaigns, where we had the nine youth camps, and we also ensured that females as well as the disabled participants were part of it. The one that was not achieved was under community sport opportunities provided to communities. And this is largely because halfway the year, we took a decision to do away with the Nelson Mandela Sports and Culture Day, which we didn't hold. And this, we did so that we could channel the money to the Rural Sport Improvement Program and to fund rural sport. So as a consequence of that, Chair, because the target itself in the ATP is named as Nelson Mandela, it doesn't matter how many participants we get in the Rural Sport Program. The AG ignores that information and saying the program called Nelson Mandela has not been held, and therefore, so this is one target we know even by the end of the financial year we're not going to achieve, because we will not hold something called Nelson Mandela Sport and Health Survey. Then, Chair, the School Sport Championship, this one we have achieved. The other targets we didn't achieve in this quarter on Active Nation was a target of 1,225 people actively participating. The target was 737. We only achieved 41,225. But we believe we are going to achieve the target, because the problem was that at the end of the 30 days, when we closed up the books for the third quarter, the provinces were still yet to report, and they have not reported as yet. But when the provinces report, particularly on their district championships and every other thing, you will see the numbers will skyrocket. So by the end of the fourth quarter, that too would have been achieved. We are confident about that fact. Again, we had a target of 10,700 for the school sport tournament at district level. And you'd see that at the time of reporting, I think only two provinces had reported, and we were sitting at 1,737. And we also were supposed to give 64 school hubs and clubs with Ataya. And the target was 1,790, and we gave 364. So that too we will achieve now in January as the deliveries are trickling in. And schools start signing up to say that they have received the attire and the equipment. And we look at the other target that was not achieved. It was the issue of the sport academies that were supposed to be supported. The target was 3,375 learners that had to go through the academy system. And we had 1,181. Of importance is that we had just given some additional funding to the National Training Center as well as to the other regional academies to support more. So we will await the reports by the district academies in the May. So by 31 March, we should have either exceeded that target or be very, very close to it. If we move to Winning Nation, which is program three of our department, there were six targets to be achieved. Four were achieved, two were not achieved. One of the biggest things is the issue of SASCOC progress report. This report has not been submitted, and so we have still not transferred money to SASCOC, I must say. And this, I think, members must take notice of importantly, because come the third week of March, and SASCOC had not given us the report. They will forfeit Women Olympic year their allocation. So I have to state this because I've got countless letters we have written to SASCOC about this, and this has been an issue of non-compliance for quite some time. And last year I came to this committee to request that I treat SASCOC like all other federations and that I hold them to account in this regard, and that we do not transfer unless they are fully complied. So with it, the implications will be severe. I'm sure if they forfeit the money because they have not given the report, there's going to be blood on the floor, because it's not like I'm going to keep the money or the department will keep the money in some hickey somewhere. We will have to surrender it back to the National Treasury, and the athletes will not have sufficient money to prepare for the Olympics. So that's why I'm taking time to alert you to the challenge you are sitting with, because the reports aren't forthcoming. And this is important. But that's one of the targets we've not achieved, because here, the target, the technical indicators, they reported report, a submitted report. And if the report of SASCOC is not there, then we have not achieved. You know, and because it's important that we monitor what SASCOC does, particularly on the OPEX program for elite athletes. Let me move to the other ones. The other one was the main event supported. We had a target of one, and we had declined. I think there were about three requests which didn't follow their normal procedure. So we declined to provide additional support to those federations that sought to bid. However, if you are aware, we have just approved two more in this quarter. The Casting and Angling Federation, they will be hosting their World Championships and will be providing support to them. And there is the African Athletic Championship that is scheduled to take place in Tekwini, and which we are also providing support to athletics. So by the end of this quarter, with those two reported, we would have also achieved that target. If we move to Program 4, which is the Sports Support Services, there were four targets to be achieved by the program during the quarter under review. Three were achieved and one was not achieved. If you look at the one that was not achieved was the Sport and Recreation Body receiving financial support payer. As you are aware, this is a common thing. Every year, by this time, we are still here. So, this year, there is a total of five federations that will not receive their monies at all. And we have already reallocated the money, and the CFO has paid them when? Last week. Last week, the reallocated funding was given to a new federation. So by the end of the quarter, we would have met the target. But importantly is that money had to be taken from those that didn't comply. So, but we will, because otherwise, if we do not reallocate the money, then we must surrender it back to the Treasury. But the federations like Transplant, which are having the African Championship, Transplant Games, they want an additional half a million. We have to reallocate to those that require more money and more resources. We have to give children of blind Richard some money to participate in an international tournament. We have to reallocate the money quickly. We had, if you remember, honorable members, we had set the deadline as November 15 last year for all documents to have been submitted to us. They still didn't, and I was a bit more sympathetic, to be honest, that some of these people will need the money. Like Garadi, for the first time ever, got a bond, also didn't comply, and so on. So they lost the thing. So I felt that we could give them some time. They could use December to do so. We did. By January, we wrote them additional letters. By February, we had dispersed even our own people in Federation support to go work with them, and I helped them get their records together. But when ultimately the director of Federation support came back to say, GD, it's not possible. Some of these people, their books and everything are just not ready, and they will not be audited in time, and they will not be ready to collect the money. So we decided that we reallocate the money, and we will talk to them coming April to see how you help them close the gap here. Because right now it means that they have a gap here. Because they will only close their hooks for 2014, and they have not closed the hooks for 2015 at the end, and we're already in 2016. So it's a bit of a challenge. So I think that's really where we are with that. But this is an annual program, largely by smaller federations, and which ultimately will be sorted out by a sports house, but we are nowhere near the sports house as yet. In program infrastructure support, this program has always been our smaller program, but as we will have it and with the pilot and everything, it is set to grow. So if you recall, previously we used to spend only about 10 million of our money in this program. But now, with personnel and everything, it will grow. And ultimately, if we win the MEEC debate, it will be the biggest program SRFA has, more than any other. So I think it's important. Right now, it has not been that important. There was one target to be achieved in this quarter, and was not. The issue was the issue of the facility management reports, which we have been doing and providing. We just had the recent metros forum with the metros, and we have agreed on the national precinct and what needs to be done in respect of that. So all in all, there were 22 targets to be achieved by the department during the quarter under review. And in total, 12 targets were achieved and 10 were not. And as I have indicated, all of those targets that were not achieved in the set quarter, most of them have already been achieved now, and by the end of the fourth quarter, only one target would remain unachieved, and that would be the target on the Nelson Mandela Sport and Culture Day. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, CJ. I was looking at the members when you were telling us that about the FASCOC. Last week, we called FASCOC. They did tell us their good story, saying that as a sport, we don't fund them. They are fundraising on their own. So, to you, honorable members, I thank you. Honorable Strike, Honorable Mute, Honorable Malase, Honorable Manana, Honorable Bev, Honorable Chai. I'm intimidated by your, by the whip and the somebody who's in my right hand side, they like you, they wanted to say, Honorable Deputy Chair, I'm on the record. In this committee, there's no Deputy Chair, but outside the committee, we do have it. Honorable Chair, Chaiza.
I just want to raise a concern around the Mandela program, because I thought that is going to be a major program around nation building. And I thought it's a joint program between ourselves and agriculture. My worry is that it is something that is in the National Development Plan. How are we going to have a program that I thought was making some kind of an impact in terms of and all of a sudden we are it's no longer there. I mean, I was wondering what happened. But what is the plan? Because we do need programs around nation building. More so that we are forced to align more our programs with the National Development Plan. Because at the moment, we are judged by Adam 14 or so, which covers social cohesion and nation building. So maybe we will get an understanding there. The second one, the chair is already indicated around SASCO. But in particular, there are serious implications given that it's a Olympic year. So my take that is that we need to be sensitive, but at the same time, I mean, we need to guard around national sporting bodies being privatized. I mean, if it's more leveraging PPP, it is something else, and that is, we can't afford a situation whereby there is non-compliance, because you must understand there are federations that put the position that says we can fund ourselves to even go to the Olympics and so on and so forth. Our approach has been, no, you can't do that. So I'm just saying it is important that SASCO needs to comply, just like other sporting bodies. I'm raising it because there is sensitivity around that. My last point is just around the facilities count. In our oversight visit, there were some provinces that were almost complete. So I'm interested to know how far we say facilities count, because for me, if we are to make an impact even with the pilot project by treasure and ourselves, I mean, the starting point would be a proper facility count and where those facilities are, and also if we are to make an impact, where must we concentrate our effort to? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will start with the follow-up comment on the to the previous presentation. You know, Chairperson, in the meeting just before the previous meeting, the other meeting, I've mentioned the situation of the sportsmen and women in the rural areas, but the DG was not there. So I want him to hear this, because the school sports organizers, we meet them from time to time. Last year, November, I remember I wrote a letter to some of your officials to invite them to come here, because the whole Matkulita Mahman Vaiji, I do meet with the sports organizers for the schools. So that day, none of official did come, but we did speak. So the situation, I mean, the experiences that they have shared with me are very terrible, because they are participating in these leagues. They went to compete in somewhere global, obviously. And then the kids that will share lend each other stages to run, because they don't have situations like that. And then in the community sports as well, there are suffer leagues, zonal and sub-regional, and they get nothing from suffer or from government or from anywhere. We fund these boys to play. We buy kids for them. We have to travel them the whole year and all these things. So I want you to know about this situation, because we are dealing with these people down the ground. At the end of the day, you end up not knowing what to explain, because they expect information from you as somebody from Parliament or something like that. Okay, and then in terms of the presentations you have shared,
I've got only one comment. That is, 55% performance is not enough and cannot be appreciated to MTG. Unless you save yourself in the fourth quarter, not the financial year. But for now, we cannot separate these things with the worst situation we have across the country. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Muteka. The next is Honorable... Who's next? Honorable Malak. It's not you. It's Honorable Malak and Honorable Manana, Honorable Bezu, and we see and Honorable. We need to keep our...
Thanks, Jen. I'll start with the first point because, I mean, when we had South Talk here last week, and I think under correction, but I remember having a discussion with Honorable Manan on the right, they somehow indicated that they were waiting for funding from the department. That's the kind of people we dealt with. That's what they said. You know, and now to hear this, it's a bit discouraging, and it's often, you know, questions. When we deal with these entities, you know, to which extent do we embrace everything that gets put to us as an accurate reflection of the situation that happens? You know, because this is not the first time. You know, we also had a previous incident about the training of coaches for schools, you know, and they disputed the figure when the department made the presentation the last financial year. But Chair, I think at this also lies a very critical thing about to which extent can the department use the tools it has, you know, to encourage good behavior and to discourage, because this whole concept of, you know, being hesitant or encouraging hesitation simply because some federations think they are self-funding, I think it would be a mistake, you know. The rules should not be treated for other people. The issue of resources is one but separate issue, you know. All the federations are enjoined to comply with the National Sports and Recreation Act, and that becomes the instrument that the department has, you know, apart from the other stuff. But I think, you know, to get results, the department, you know, is taking the right course of action of withholding funding. And I think, you know, regardless of whether it's in the year of the Olympics, a do-nothing approach won't change behavior, because they will know that at the end of the day, you know, they'll get the funding because the department will feel like, oh, it's in the year of the Rio Olympics and we must be seen to be supportive of it. So at the end of the day, what you have is there's no consequences for these federations, you know, even for the super body. I mean, it's discouraging if it was just small federations, but, you know, Sostok is constantly conscious of the need to do this. And it shouldn't turn into which federations do better and which others don't. But, you know, there's an emerging trend, and this is just one of them. It's unrelated to the subject, but the DG knows very well about it. But the other problem is SASCO, you know, about just surpassing official government protocols in doing things. So it's becoming a constant delinquent federation, in so to say. And we must tackle this picture, because how consistent are we going to be ourselves in encouraging intervention if we let things like this slide? Because what was presented to us last week and is what's being done here, I mean, it's, you know, let me not let you being unparliamentary, but I'm lost for words, you know, because even when we dealt with other issues which we had to divert from, but this is unacceptable, because basically they told us something that doesn't exist. To be polite, that's what
I know, honorable members, that's why I didn't want that it must come from the president. I was so surprised when DG is giving this irrespective of the glorious picture that we were having. I can't use other words. That's why I said, members, we must engage with the thing of DG.
And just to finish off there, I think, Chairperson, I think if I remember well, the In one of the previous presentations, the DJ indicated that there is a sponge or either his office door was open to help the federations that are funding to comply, to actually, you know, make sure that they comply so that funding can, you know, can be supplied to. Because what we get to deal with outside of this is we get inundated with letters from federations complaining about how they are not being funded and all of that stuff. What they don't say is they are failing to be proactive in approaching the department to say, you know, because some of them, you know, arguably they don't have capacity and all of that. But when people don't use available options, then they are being disingenuous. And I think the department should have no shame whatsoever in sharing with those federations that are failing to do that. Because what they are doing is they are failing the athletes. The athletes then look, you know, at the department and then say, you are the one failing us. Then they write to us, we get inundated with the same emails about this. So we waste our time in getting the DG about the federation that, you know, around South Africa or something else complaining about funding and all of that. So it defocuses our work on key other critical issues that we could be focusing on. And we are not dealing with, when we are dealing with disingenuous people and federations. And I think DG should have those names of those federations so that your work and focus, because we have to reward good compliance when it's done. And when there is a sports function in place and it's not used, I mean, people are not serious. We can't be trying to reach out for people to get what they should get by doing the actual jobs.
Thank you, Honorable. Thank you, Chairperson. My I just want to find out on the DC Chairperson on the infrastructure support. Since the number of provinces with completed facilities audit, you never achieved any also the facilities. So what are the challenges with the provinces facing with regard to do the facility audits. And on the sports support, Chairperson, I just want to find out how much resources has the department put in place on the APG to ensure that they fully implement their mandate and continue to hold the federation accountable in transformation. Because what I know exactly is that I'm quite sure that the APG has done its role. It's just they are waiting there for the implementation. And on the winning nation. So my question is that has the advisory and the monitoring service been set up to assist with the talent identification and development program? Are the mobile academies assisting in this regard? In which provinces has this program been successfully implemented? And what are the current challenges being faced? Active nursing Chairperson. I just want to find out to the GPG on since they've provided with equipment and the attire in the 9 provinces, if I'm not mistaken, while they've already mentioned that the whole country, in which are those provinces in the 364 that have been provided with the equipment? And the other question is that this one of the Nelson Mandela Chairperson, Nelson Mandela Sports and Cultural Days event. Why was it not impossible to host the Nelson Mandela Sports and Cultural Days event? And the impact that they had, is it the budget, the target, or the plan on that Nelson Mandela? The last one. I'm not going to go to the SASCOC one for SAP. They even got it, so they were emotional on some of the questions, especially this one, because they said, no, they're with the SRSA, they're still waiting for the SRSA, and let me not even go there, Chairperson, let me stop it.
My last question, I just want to find out on the administration, how has the internal audit and risk management assisted COFS in South Africa in this quarter, and what measures have been put in place? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Malana, Honourable Beth.
Thank you, Honourable Jefferson. Thank you, Honourable Ndiji, for a very honest presentation. We appreciate this honesty. I'm not going to bow because I've been covered largely by Kokenda Nelson and Maladay. That was my concern. What I want to ask is, what, besides withholding the funds for SAFT, what other remedial actions can take, and how can we help our community safe in the department? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Beth.
Thank you very much, Sir President. Program one, I think we should appreciate the fact that study was provided to so many employees, to the people capacitating them. I just want to get right now how this program is validated. And program number one, it seems as if now there's still the vacancy rate is really high. I want to check that now. Is there anything perhaps that is being done better to fill these vacancies so that now we achieve more for program one? Because we need to create more jobs for the people. Apparently, Chairperson, there's something that is wrong here. Whether it's the department is waiting for invoices to come from these entities. So I just want to check really, well, what is the department that is doing now in order to check this first thing that is happening? Because that delay in giving these invoices now will make the department not achieve what is the field of self or the digital. And again, there's this low spending I've just seen here. Well, what is the reason for this? Then coming now to program number five about infrastructure. So you say it really has not been correct that we have done here, as if we are waiting for the quarter to make yourself unique. Is it because that now you are waiting something for the quarter to do something about the NIC that you are not very serious if I put it to it? That you are not very serious about the infrastructure support health with this NIC. Is it because of that or because there isn't enough money? Those are my questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG. I've got one question for us. The Select Committee on Appropriations and National Treasurer has observed that there is a poor spending on this program and ECO Program 5 and a trend of shifting funds from the program to augment other programs. This trend is likely to continue if no clear plans put forward for this program. If I can ask that question, it's a little bit related on what Honourable Insider is saying. I think it is.
Out of respect, let me start with your question. The Select Committee's on Appropriations observation, I think is unfortunate, but it is correct. And it's correct because you would recall that we started in NF the fight on the MIG from 2012. And since then, we have allocated some money to make ourselves ready. Should we get the MIG money, then we'll be ready to implement it the next day. That was the key question. And that is an issue the previous committee, this same portfolio committee in the previous session of parliament had to deal with and agree with us that it was necessary for us to allocate some resources. So what we do normally is that when we see that the financial year it is going to end and we don't have the need funding, and you see we couldn't hire people and say be here and on the bench until the need is here. You only hire the people when you are certain that the need is coming. But at the beginning of the year, you avail the money to be ready should the need arise that you have to now hire them. And so when that comes and we didn't receive the need, we apply to the treasurer and we ask to say, can we be allowed to move this money from this program into the other programs where we have treasurers? But now, knowing what we know and knowing that we are going to run a pilot, is it still necessary to move funding related to infrastructure to other areas? No. I've already indicated that we will be appointing engineers and every other person we need and the capacity we require. So I do not think that this is the problem or the appropriations committees of the mission that says the trend is likely to continue. I think the appropriations committees are oblivious to the fact that there is this deal, which is not the best one, but it is the deal we have to do something with that. So I think that is the context and the basis, and it doesn't mean we don't take this program seriously. It actually means we are taking it seriously, that we have allocated resources to be ready should the need arise and that should we receive the money. Now knowing what we know and to show the correctness of what we are doing, the treasury itself has agreed with us. First they said they were going to give us 10 million. Somewhere along the line we heard that they have reduced it, but it is 6. So fine, they are giving us the 6. So which means that we will no longer in our own normal budgeting be taking money from other areas and budgeting it there. Federally now, working with the CFO, have already locked the budget for the next financial year, and we already know where the money is going to be. So I don't think that the comment is fair to say the trend is likely to continue. I think they could have made an observation, and I don't know why the Committee on Appropriation have not asked us questions like they have in the past. Because they typically are unhappy about something. They write to us and they say we must explain ourselves what are they seeing with that. Because I guess some analysts in the Treasury went to brief them and said, this one, they always put money there and they move it there. And then they put money here, they move it there, and they always move it in the last quarter of the financial year. And to somebody who doesn't understand the context, it looks very terrible. But it is actually not terrible. Yeah. It is very prudent what we have been doing, because the worst thing that could happen was that Treasury comes here and reports to this committee and say, no, this one must not tell you anything. We have tried to give them the money. They were not ready to spend it. And then what then do we say? We are going to make excuses the whole day that, no, we should have budgeted for them, but we didn't budget because we were not sure that we were going to get the money or not. Mm-hmm. We can't work like that because we have to be ready. If we are fighting this thing, we must fight them. If that, we will win. So since 2012, it's true. This 2012, we have been at the beginning of the year budgeting money there saying, should we get the money, we have money to appoint people, and then they can implement the program. And then when the money is not coming and we see it's February, we write to the Treasury before the cut-off date of 15 March, and we say to them, give us the authority to move the money to the other program. Mm-hmm. And Treasury always gives us that authority. There's never a year we said this and audit query because we just moved money we needed. Treasury didn't agree with us. So all the years they've been asking us for the motivation why we want to move that money. And we explained, this money is so that if you give us the need, we will be ready to implement the new program. And they've always been agreeing and allowing us to move the money. So I think that is the context. And I'm sure that if they ask us, we would have easily clarified it. So they don't have to put it as part of the record. Let me answer the issue of Nelson Mandela. I see it's a funny issue for members. Nelson Mandela is not totally gone away. In our privatized budget, it is coming back again this coming financial year, 2016-17. It will come back, but it will for the first time coexist with the Rural Sport Improvement Program. But our budget is so small that if you speak an introduction of a program, something must give. Something must go away. So it's a question of what needs to go away. But something must go away, must give way to introduce something new. We are now at least a budget saturation to the extent that we don't speak new programs, we rather speak quality of delivery. I think that's where we are. So when the minister signed and the presidency insisted on support for rural schools, which is correct, but I don't think we must mix with that we don't believe in this. We have to reevaluate all our programs and say, then what? And then with the wisdom of the ministry, we took a decision to say, this must go and pave way for a rural sport improvement program. So I think that's what it is. But next year, next financial year, we have budgeted, as I've indicated, we have done away with some more of the programs. We will pave way for the two of them to coexist. So 2016-17 will be the first financial year we are actually co-funded the two. So in this, I'm also answering what Honorable Manana raised. The only issue is not target. The only thing like in the performance information we have noticed is the target is because we are hoping to achieve a number of participants. We tagged Nelson Mandela 18,000 participants. So we have tagged 18,000. That 18,000 is now water under the bridge. But importantly, it is because of the issue of the budget, because we have moved the money to deliver Nelson Mandela, moved it to deliver something else. Let me move to the issue of the facilities count. On the facilities count, Honorable Chief Whip and Honorable Manana, the issue is that you recall what we need is an audit. I'm going to repeat this. What we need is an audit. What will help us make better informed decisions and policies is an audit. But having had this for about 3 years and not succeeding and realizing that there is no capacity, and it doesn't help floating a dead horse over and over and hoping that it will only stand up and jump and start running. So we decided let's do a simpler thing so that even the municipalities and the provinces can gain in confidence. And so we went down to a facility count and we committed ourselves that we must help the provinces that are struggling to be able to do the count. Fine. From day one when this count started, we were hard at work. We simplified the form. We ran a roadshow to provinces. We went around all provinces. We got the facilities enumerator from municipalities nominated by each and every municipality. There were challenges from where go. In the urbanized municipalities like Gauteng, it was more easier to have everybody in the workshop quickly. First attempt, everyone is there, train everyone. They go to a pilot immigration, they come back, and then we choose a section in a township, they go come there, they come back. We look for errors, everything, and then we have a second workshop with them, and then they off they go to do the real count. But in the more rural provinces, it was a struggle. We get to convene this. Some municipalities have not sent representatives. The training has to be done for the second time, meaning level one training must be done for the second time for the municipalities that were not there. Some of them still don't come to the second training session, and we issue letters to municipal managers. There's but so much I can do as a DG to threaten the municipal managers. Okay, if you don't comply, this is what is going to happen. You know? And so the only biggest carrot we got that started this province's moving was after the treasury and us agreed on the pilot. And our condition was to say, if you have not done the count in your municipality, the facilities are not coming to you. So that prompted now some municipalities started harassing us. But this was already late last year, I'm sure you know. But for the better part, from April last year until around October, we were struggling in a big way to get this rural provinces to move. But you will see that immediately after my last letter to them in November saying that they are not going to get facilities unless they do the count, provinces started jumping, and everybody, because they knew the money was there to be allocated to the provinces, and everybody wanted the facilities. It was now a good herald than just speak for them to move. Since then, almost 6 provinces are completed. And remember, we simplified this even further. We made it an online thing so that they don't have to carry a lot of papers. So they actually, after they come back to the office, they go onto the internet and they punch the data that they got onto an online system. And that online system already is counting, is telling us, and we're already able to disaggregate the information that's already online. So three provinces are almost complete, with the remaining three, the bigger challenge remains Northern Cape. In truth, I understand their challenge. With everything done and with all the numerators trained, many of the municipalities are poor, and they are saying they do not have money to send these people out to communities to go do the camp. And honestly, I can tell you, I believe that it's not out of not trying, because in where you can see that there are affluent municipalities like Solberg, they are almost at 80%. But when you look at Karahai, one of the poorest municipalities, they are at about 20%. So, and you can see that it is not through lack of desire to do this. It is genuine when they tell you that we don't have the money to do this thing, and they are right. So the rest of the others, the other two provinces, they are at about, one is at 40, the other 50%. But it is only because they started late. So our deadline remains for them, they demand money. We haven't extended the deadline, and we have said that everyone must expect to meet that deadline. We have ourselves and people from our facilities unit in Tangeli has been going around. We have disaggregated already. The reason I know this data like this is because about 3 weeks ago, we sat down to look at a plan to dispatch people to the municipalities that were still lagging behind. And so I said to them, there are two streams of work we need to do. There are the so-called quick wins, where you see a province is already at 90%, but it's not reaching. A few municipalities are not ready. So that's where we go first, to help this province, the critical mass, to arrive where all six are now done. And then to identify the ones that are really, really struggling, the two, one at 40 and the other at 50, especially people there, work with them, supervise them on a daily basis until the end of the financial year to load. And Northern Cape is a special case you have to deal with differently. So in this new financial year, I'm talking to the CFO to give them a special allocation for them to finish the camp. This will solve one problem for me, that we will know for the first time how many facilities we have in this country. What we will not be able to determine that way is to say, how big is the facilities? What conditions are they in? How much repair will they require? What budget is it? That we won't be able to achieve. We need an audit to achieve that. As soon as we finish the count, our background will then come. And this is the commitment we have made, and we have said that we'll do the count first, and when we finish with the count, we'll then move on to the audit. The audit, we have found a new Dr. Bernard van der Spree has helped us in a big way, working with Dr. Passon. And they have helped us find a way in which we can divide the modules of the audit. So everybody from where it goes will do module A, which is built up on the account. And then we'll move to module B. And then the more complex modules, like F, which looks at financing requirements and looks at the state of facilities, all of that, into pictures that needs to be taken of each and every facility along, and the condition report, which is the more expensive aspects of this, will come much later. So we are staggering this over a period of 4 to 5 years to finish the whole audit, because it's the only way we can afford it. We will not have money to pay for a full audit all at once. So I think that is the whole point about the facilities audit. So by end of the financial year, we are a bit more confident that at least 8 of the 9 provinces should have finished or almost be very, very close to finish. So that's with the audit. With regard to the questions of Honorable Muteka on the kids in rural areas who are facing difficulties and the rallies there, we are honestly fully aware of what you are raising. It's an issue we have raised all the time. But we have continuously said that we encourage participation nevertheless, because we shouldn't say because you don't have running shoes, you should not run. In fact, champions in this country like Dr. Kumalo, like Lucas Kadebe, all of them played on the grassy soccer pitches, often with no soccer boots or anything. And yet we managed to produce champions. We ourselves, when we were athletes, I ran barefoot, and that was the real issue of the situation, and we made no excuses as to why, and whenever the facilities fail, then we'll play meter, you know. We made do and used what we had at the time, because the truth of the matter is that government intervention would not treat everyone all at the same time. So these realities are there, and they are realities, and that's why when we are reporting, I will never come to this committee and say, we have delivered everything and we have given all the 94,000 schools. So we'll tell you, we'll report honestly as far as we can with the resources we have. We'll say we have delivered to 354 schools. We'll tell you that we have supported only 280 clubs and so on and so forth. We'll tell you as it is so that you know that the conditions on the ground don't change. They remain what they are, and we are fully aware of the challenges down there. Yes, right now by first quarter, it looks at 55% performance on Honorable Mutega, but this issue I always underlined. Even last year, around this time, I was here answering the same thing. Then our targets were 57, and the committee wasn't happy, and I said, for me, it's not much about how I start, it is how I finish. Which is important, because we always dedicate the third quarter as I was doing, and mostly if you look at this, it isn't the performance targets that we have, it's mostly administrative targets and the indicators that are left behind, and which is what we close up in the last quarter. Things like Atlanta Inflation Survey and things like that are what, and where we will not be able to achieve the targets. I've always been honest and open enough to say this one won't be achieved, but the rest which we will achieve, we will, and that is why last year we achieved 95% of our target. So we will achieve, that I can assure you. End of the financial year, you will not see a 55% target or something of that sort. You will see a much more healthier picture than what it is. And I think that's why when I started, I said, our targets and the quotas don't go the way typically the treasury sells them and say 25 now, 50 then 75 then. That measure is artificial to us. The CFO calls it an arithmetic measure, but we don't really live by that. We live by what is necessary to be done within the 12-month period, and we do that within that period. Honorable Malati, the issue of first court, we know, Chair, with your permission, maybe let me take 5 minutes just so. I want to take a committee into conference for 5 minutes.
I would say you can answer, but let me say this, honorable member, so that you can understand. I guess for a long time, subcourts have been the big ball of sports in South Africa. And most of, primarily from the time he was a boxer, under Cameron Kennedy. Noxal was there, it was a national Olympic committee, more like one other Olympic. And then there were circles and what were there. There was a view of the sports movement, which is bringing everything under one umbrella. Another time, I don't know why government did this, but government somehow was critics that are in. Government motivated some of these in half and gave it to the confederation. Some of the powers that you see in terms of the national legislation of sports, government sports, in other countries, give government authority to intervene and to resolve these issues. It's not the case with UK for Canada and other modified issues. Now, with that in mind, government gave some of its power, and that talk not only became an Olympic committee, but also became a cost concern. So it's a two-in-one. Whereas in other countries, you also find that the Commonwealth is associated with a standalone committee. I think it happens so. In our country, that body is that one. SAFCOG is also a Commonwealth. SAFCOG is also an Albertan. Okay, so it is everything. It also is in a number of the international schools that are sharing. It's one good for everything. So there is no diversification before. So, we have essentially created this super monster, this government system, and over years by practice, in convention, not anything in writing, but by practice and convention,
For a long time, and I'm sure you know, this is not the first time they did this.
2014, they also got their money in second week of March because they gave us their record in second week of March. After the decision to sign the agreement, and one of the reasons they were refusing to sign the agreement was that they said that they are the ones who must set the target of how many medals the country must get. And we advised the minister to say, no, minister, it's you who must set the target for them. You must say, here's the money, which is, go get me 12 medals, or 5 medals, or 8 medals, depending how much we give them and what is the potential of what. But because when we were going to the London Olympics, the concern the president was announcing that South Africa is going to get 12 medals. Nobody knew about this, where the 12 comes from, and so on. So as I reported, we went out of our way to do our own analysis of the countries, actually. Who were they competing with internationally? How much money was available for them to do so? And we evaluated and we said, at best, we will get funding. We were followed. The only battle, honestly, in all fairness, which we didn't anticipate would get was brilliant athletes money. We had actually thought Mr. Lima was going to give us about men. Because when we looked at Bridget, we thought that we found best intention to finish fourth. Because we compared her qualifying times and everything with all the competitors she was competing with across the world. But she surprised us. She beat the rest and she finished third. But Schley, wouldn't we have thought that she was going to give us a bronze medal and not a silver? She didn't throw that well in the javelin at the Olympics and she didn't get any medal. But we ended up fine. Which was more or less what we counted that we were going to get fine. Where the child starts talks about the river again. And if we fell there the night, even with the Palintia, even with rowing, when we called that, they were not fun to rowing because they had in terms of competition. You have to be in the top 8 for you to get the money. And we refused that. You bring money to them and you have this money, you will only be to rowing. And rowing must get that for them, the money. And honestly, Honorable Member, if we didn't do that, that medal in Rome was also not come. Even the medal of Mozambique, which I hope that medal too would not have come. So a whole host of people who gave money that year. Even Snell, we gave her more money because she was complaining that she was complaining that she wants to do a training camp in Europe, and she first called was a student to give her the money for the training camp. And she wanted an additional 190 something. We never kicked her back on China, and we researched it against the athletes. We said, you can't use this for any other purpose. And when that late night, I was with the former CFO, the CFO, Maharaj, called me, it was a problem, because I then had to correct them that if they had the money for any other thing, just I'll open a criminal case. And then they passed money on to the athletes. But the important part, I'm reading this, precisely because I think they move from two different points. There will always be this issue when we move from that point. So
got that too. My thing. So I think that is the key thing about the whole story. So I'm not going to say who lied, who didn't lie. The facts will speak for themselves. Even if the committee calls me with passport, I will bring and I will produce the letter that show that we have been writing to them. This is not the first time. I'm sure you would see, if you ask for records, you see that they always pay them like in the last court. And only after a lot of struggle, and I have insisted that their need is gone, you know, the money is not coming. And only then we get what we want. So they finally find to agree on the target set by the minister for this 2016 Olympics. We have given them, by the way, a target of 8 medals. They are not announcing everywhere else, but we have set the target of 8, and we have said we want a plan that shows us how they are going to achieve the 8. So now the biggest issue is that this report, specific one, that is outstanding, and which is making us not achieve one of the targets. That report is an important report that is supposed to tell us what is the plan for it. There's no issues about it. If you ask me now as a DG in government, I'll tell you that
I don't know much about which athletes are going to get up the medals. And I'll guess with you, I'll pick up Guy and I'll say where. But isn't it better that the country knows and that the representatives of the people know that when I'm here, I can also brief you and say, this is the plan and this is how we are financing it. So that outstanding report is exactly that issue, and that's what is still remaining. On the EPG funding, I think we're funding them enough with limited resources for EPG. They have expanded to 16 codes, and they are doing what we call the two outer codes as well, which is random selection of the codes. So by next fund, okay, this year we'll also be signing transformation agreements with 11 others, because five others we have signed. So I think we are doing well there. We have also hired new personnel, particularly for the EPG. So there I think there is sufficient support that we are providing within the limitations of what we have. In as far as sport equipment and attire to which provinces and schools, we'll have to send you a list. I don't think I will mention all of the 360 now. We can send the list to the committee, all provinces, it's all provinces, but the list of schools that have signed up to say they have received the equipment and attire that we can send to members of the committee. And the support internal audit and risk management has given to Books in South Africa, it has been consistently the same support. We have extended our services there and so on. And we are hoping we return them to unqualified. They have challenges, boxing has challenges, but as you know, we are now waiting for the Minister of Finance to give his concurrence to our Minister for the appointment of the CEO. The CFO started yesterday, and the COO post has been advertised, and I think the board is going to shortlist and interview now. So, and the junior posts at the lower level have all been filled now. So boxing soon will be at full capacity and should be able to turn things around. And then what will be the issue of the vacancy rate? I'll leave this to Ms. Alinaga to respond to the issue of the vacancy rate. There are questions about the invoices that are paid after 30 days. I think the CFO, when he deals with the finances, he will answer to that. And lastly, the issue of the talent ID for academies and model academies and in each province, this is working well. Honorable Manan, I think since we inaugurated the National Training Center, we've already provided support to five provinces, to Free State, Northwest, KwaZulu-Natal, to Gauteng, as well as Eastern Cape. And the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal have just been done this previous week. So we are already on the road. So, and each province has been signing up for this. And while we are still building up this team, but it is working well, there are like 12 mobile stations and a bus, one big bus, that does mini setup of everything. And we are now building capacities in the provinces for the district academies. So all provinces, that is, we have asked for their thing, and we have ring-fenced money, I think 5% of their grant for academies in this area. So look, you can answer the question on the vacancy rate.
Okay. No, thanks, members of the committee. The vacancy rate at the moment, when you look at it at face value, it's sitting at a scary 29% vacancy rate. Now, without context, that is going to shock you. And I think what must just be placed on record is that the department has been going through an organizational review process, which means that we are currently sitting with two structures. Now, there's the current structure, which for purposes of this explanation, I'll call the old structure. Then there's a new structure, which is the envisaged structure. So when you make comparison between these two structures, there are posts in the old structure which are still recurrent in the new and envisaged structure. There are certain posts which are in the old structure, but which will no longer exist in the new structure. And there are certain posts that would be in the new structure and will never exist in the old structure. So there's that comparison. Now, what we have had to do is that we have had to create certain posts additional to the establishment. That means that you've got the old structure, you've got these posts that you need now, but which are not in the old structure. So you create them additional to establishment, and you fill them. So when you look at that scenario, you find that the vacancy rate is actually high, but at the moment we are going through the process of uploading the new structure. So once you create this new structure, which means you bring the end to the old structure, just out of that process, our vacancy rate is going to drop to 40%. So, Chairperson, to try and say in simplistic terms, the reason why our vacancy rate is currently this high is because we've been going through the process of organizational review. We've gone into the first year now, busy with this process. We have started now because the new structure has been signed off by the minister. We have started with the process of uploading this new structure so that by the first quarter of the next financial year, we are operating on the new structure, which means that Chairperson, we are now placing on record that this long process called organizational review, which we'll be talking about, we are bringing an end to it by the coming quarter, the first quarter of the next financial year. And once that happens, the vacancy rate would automatically drop from where it was to about 14%. Complementary to that, we have also fast-tracked the process, Chairperson, of our recruitment. Of course, you know, with recruitment process, you bring people in, but others are also leaving. So I think the shift in terms of our performance of last quarter, it has been, I will not be able to confirm the extra number, but I think we've been able to fill at least 14 positions, out of which, unfortunately, we've also had 10 resignations. It is important, again, Chairperson, for us to equally put it on record that we've been cautioned by National Treasury that as we continue to recruit, we should equally be mindful of the fact that we are not going to get additional money for compensation of employees. So, whilst at book value we look like our vacancy rate is high, once we do this exercise that we have explained to you, we collapse positions that are additional to establishment into the structure, we might actually find ourselves having to take it easy on recruitment because our money might not be able to carry all the posts that we need to fund. So I'm saying this long story, but the bottom line is that we are concluding the organizational review process. That process itself will reduce the vacancy rate. And on the other side of things, we are also now keeping an eye on the money that we have to ensure that it is able to carry us, because we will definitely not be getting additional money for compensation of employees.
To simplify this matter, your colleague
I saw scaring.
Okay.
I saw your face, Chair. Let me just simplify this matter. Chair, the problem is that when vacancies are counted, all vacancies on the old structure, even the ones that we don't need anymore, are being counted. So that is why the vacancy rate will say 29%. But the vacancy rate has to be compared with the money we have to pay employees. How much money do we have? The money we have, we are able to carry the current employees that are employed, plus the new ones. Let me give an example of one post which is critical. Or even the two, there are more, there are many. There is a post of Dr. Willy Basson. Is the secretary of the EPD, and that makes him a director of EPD secretariat on the new organogram. His post doesn't exist in the old structure, because in the old structure we never had the EPD and so on. But we are currently paying him. He's there, he's employed. When the vacancy rate is looked at, even if we fill this post of Dr. Basson, it doesn't reduce the vacancy rate, because the vacancy rate is only counted on the positions on the structure, and his post is not on the structure. Although we are bleeding money by paying, we are spending more than what the vacancy rate is showing. The reality of the matter is that it is not helping us reduce the vacancy rate, although it's there. So if you look at the headcount, we are supposed to be 219 staff members, all in all, on the old structure. But if you look in reality, according to the old vacancy, or the old structure, it presupposes
that we are only at the department 169, but we are not 169. We are much more than 169 by this other people who have appointed additional to the structure. These people's posts are here on the new structure, or the future structure, as DPSA calls it. So we went back and forth with DPSA over a long time to analyze that structure. And the last thing was one dispute. DPSA was saying, we can't have chief director communication. We were saying, no, we need chief director communication. They said, no, we are a small department, therefore our communication must be pitched at the director level downwards. And we said, no, our success and everything has been hinged upon our ability to communicate better, and that's why most sponsors are coming on board, because we talk a lot about what we do. We need a higher person to manage relations at that level. And there's been that to and fro. For that one post, they were refusing to give us their concurrence. We referred the dispute to the Public Service Commission, which ultimately came back and said our minister must have a final say if there is a dispute. And with that, our minister has now signed on the structure with the post chief director communication. What then, which is what the protest tool is now explaining, this now paves way for us to remove the old structure on the side and load a new structure. Immediately we load that structure, and people like Dr. Vili Basson and Dr. Ruth Mujeriko see themselves on the new structure on Persal, and their posts are now being counted as no longer vacant or as posts on the structure. That will reduce our vacancy rate to 14%. Just that exercise alone. This is oblivious to the 14 Sulu speaks about, which we are just hired. If we had that 14 as well, then our vacancy rate will even go even further down. The biggest risk now for us is that with these two exercises we are having, we must not find ourselves saying hired more people than we can afford to pay. And that's what the Treasury cautioned us and wrote to us to say, your expenditure on personnel is there. Your vacancy rate is there. The two gaps are not going together and they are supposed to go together. So then they asked for an explanatory meeting. We met with them, they explained what we were doing with DPSA, we presented before them. They were happy to see what we are doing, but they felt that we must go slow on recruitment, because once you are hired, you are hired. You can't now say to a person, sorry, I hired you, but I realize I can't afford you. So, and then they wanted a matching exercise of the new, the old, or the existing people with the new posts. That exercise has now been completed, and Sulu's unit is now responsible for cleaning up their file. In cleaning up their file, it means that even the positions that are counted as vacant now, but which we don't need anymore, must be totally abolished, and we must do away with them. So there is a... No, we're not retrenching. The principle we had committed to from what go with the union, that there was no retrenchment, and that those on the redundancy list will be retrained and replaced elsewhere. We have managed, in fact, with the making and placing exercise, to do that work and replace everybody everywhere. The only thing here remaining for us, and which I think it was about the posts of people who are affected, of where people are out of adjustment, where on the old structure you were a level 5 person, and on the new structure your post is now level 7. Because of the agreement with the unions, we couldn't just promote you unduly and you jump from 5 to 7. And equally, if you were level 7 and your post now on the new structure is level 5, we don't just downgrade you to level 5. It's unfair labor practice. So what we have done was to keep people like that. So there at the level 7 post, we place you against it. But you don't end at a level 7, you end at a level 5. Which the union can't argue that it is unfair, because it was a principle agreed before the process started. And vice versa. If you are now a level 7 and you are being paid at a level 7, your job is now at level 5. You still get paid at a level 7, but you do a level 5 job. So, but when you leave, or you resign, or we fire you, or you die, or something, what happens then is that the new one who comes into that post will then come in at a level 5, not just a level 7. So there were like three cases like that after we did the making and placing exercise. So we are right at the tail end of the process, and had we not been delayed by the to and fro with DPSA, we would have finished last year. But we are now at the tail end, and by the time Darfur is going to close as well on the third week of March and open up in the first week of April. When it does, and it opens up afresh, and it's a new financial year, because it closes so that CETA can extract all the records and save them for the hotel journal so that they know exactly what was the teachers that they want much. So, but once they reopen it, you will see a new structure, see everything, and the teacher will look totally different. So this is not an issue we in the department now are worried about or sensitive at all. Our biggest worry is to make sure that we rather recruit the last of the employees in April so that we won't find ourselves having recruited more than what we can afford to pay. Because we have already been cautioned.
Thank you, DG. We were worried when the presentation was presented that this process of restructuring, it took 2 years. And that's why we still see this 29%. Honorable members, still having about three presentations to meet. Is anyone who's supposed to add on the question in your side, DG? Honorable members, are you happy? Okay. That's your time. But at this time, you are just losing, please. I'm not happy. It's not balancing the gender question.
Our key programs in the department are run by women. So our COO, our chief director, mass participation, they are dealing with the school championships and they are out. And our COO is also responsible for the Commonwealth Games, and we have an important planning mission there. And Onya is busy with the Rumsundan and the PE thing. So
we needed those apologies up front. We can't have the department that was doing oversight on it, not telling us what is going on about the gender question. Apology accepted.
Okay.
Well, I'll be brief with my presentation. I think we're going to talk about my colleagues as the DJ. The committee should also note the comments that have been made by the Minister of Finance relating to compensation of employees. So we are taking this serious as well. But we are not just going to fill in vacancies. There should be priority posts. Maybe, let me start with the issues around the invoices not paid within 30 days. There's an assessment that was done by the AG last year with the report that we received. The AG said to us that it takes us less than 7 days to pay our supply average. There's an average that was done by the AG, and they came back and said that it takes the department less than 7 days for you to pay your supply. But over and above that, on a monthly basis, we submit reports to the to National Treasury and the Department of Monetary Evaluation on all suppliers that are paid over 30 days, and all invoices that we have that are over 30 days that we still need to pay. There are exceptions that have been noted. It's not the norm, it's exceptions. There are exceptions that have been noted on the reports that are submitted to both Treasury and the Department of Monetary Evaluation. We always assess those invoices. And I request that my colleagues to give me reasons why we are not paying suppliers within 30 days. The reasons will vary from the supplier submitting wrong invoices, meaning that the invoices they submit are not up to standard. Secondly, there will be issues of check clearance certificates, there will be issues around the issues of the date on the invoice not being correct. So we are documenting all those reasons for audit purposes, so that when the auditors ask us why didn't we pay the suppliers within 30 days, we give them those reasons. In the next financial year, we are currently developing a standard operating procedure to ensure that all these exceptions are addressed. We do not come at the end. We make sure that we do not have those exceptions. We try and address those things, even though, unfortunately, they would always be there. So, Chairperson, that's what we are doing in relation to issues of incidents. I'll swiftly move into the quarterly report that I've presented. If there are no questions on the incidents.
There's a report. I'll go into the third quarter. I'll not go into the second quarter as well, like the DG did. But what I've done is that I'm doing some comparison between the second quarter and the third quarter. By the end of December, the department has spent 720 million out of the 988 million budget that has been appropriated, which is 73% of the total budget allocated. We're supposed to have spent 75% of the budget, which is about 741 million, but there were transfers that were not done. I'll give reasons later. In terms of compensation of employee services, we have spent 69% of our total budget. In quarter two, the department has spent 43.1 million, which is about 46% of our budget. There are real data provided. There are still vacant roles like director, IT, school sport, and other vacancies for junior and middle management positions. I think the committee should also know that there's been cuts as well that have been affected by the pressure. There's been a 2 million that has been taken from the budget to cover other pressures that the country experiences, the fiscal is experiencing. So from our budget, they took 2 million from compensation of employees. Over and above that, yes. So over and above that, we are also going to move about 5 million for compensation of employees to cover over exchange goods and services. We've already engaged treasury has agreed to that effect. We are currently filling those vacant positions. But also to make comparison from the previous financial year, by this time last year we had 9% underpaid. I think we should also know that now we are 80%. So there has been that increase from the previous financial year to the current financial year. In terms of goods and services, we're at 86%, which is totaling 142 million out of a budget of 165 million. So we had more than 75%. I think mainly this is due to the fact that we are rolling out most of our programs in the second and third quarter, like the DG has already explained, that most of our programs were implemented in the second and the third quarter. We are left with, we are not receiving lots of money, but what I can assure the committee is that we are going to spend all the money in goods and services. We might underspend in compensation of employees, but the underspend as well is managed. My intention is to spend 99.9% of our budget of the department. That's what we are waiting for. In terms of transfers, we are at 70%, which is totaling 506.5 million, which is 5% less than the arithmetic forecast of 25%. The committee would remember that we are currently implementing the penalty schedule, which was agreed with all provinces. So the reason why we are underpaying on transfer is because there are provinces that have been penalized. Limpopo, Western Cape, and KZN. We are currently engaging with them to make sure that they address the issues that we raise, so that we are giving them the money. But we are also agreeing with them, with the money that we are going to give to you. There are certain things that we are affecting from them. There are provinces, there's a province that is currently giving us some problems, but we'll resolve it when we engage with them. It's only one. In terms of payment of capital assets, we're at 67% of expenditure out of the budget of 2.1 million. When we move to budget the economic certification, I think I've already spoken to that. Conversation of employees with a budget of 100 million. Goods and services, 165. In terms of transfers to provinces, 567 million. Public entities, 303 million. Federation, 153 million. And capital assets is about 2.1 million. Budget per program, I think some of this information is the police. I mean, the members of the committee. I'm not speaking to my belief. In terms of program one, administration is... the program had 124 million, program 2, Active Nation, 628 million, Winning Nation, 92 million, Sports Support Program 4, 103 million, our smallest program, Infrastructure Support, that's 1% of our budget, the network, which has 9.6 million. So there's an analysis on compensation of employees, goods and services, transfers, and there's a lot of information there that I think that in a nutshell, giving a picture of the expenditure of the department in detail, which I think members of the committee would go at their own leisure. But like I said, of importance to us is the fact that we should be able to spend this money. We're currently engaging with Treasury around the fact that where we're overspending, we might require money to cover for the underpayment so that we don't get an overexpenditure. So that's what we're currently doing, Shatterson. Thank you very much.
The money and the other things, they are not like, doesn't want too much of quality. If it's black and white, it's black and white. Even in our own areas, we were leading. When it comes to treasury or finances, you ask where you don't understand the clarification. It's like when you're presenting your administration or whatever. Honorable members, that's the presentation. Honorable Manana, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think the first thing I must just welcome the presentation, which in short. So, I just want to find out, person to the table, that if they're talking about the invoice and not up to standard, do you call all the service providers to train to give a format on how to write the invoice or not? Because if they're not up to standard, why you have trained them that we need invoice like this one, when they pay, they submit their invoices as service providers and you are unable to pay them because it's not up to standard, it's not according the format you have given it to them. Thank you. Because the companies of the service providers have gone ahead and yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. I think there are minimum standards that we expect from a US. It must have a date. There will be an invoice number. It must correlate with the purchase order that you've received. Those are minimum things that we expect. You would have given us a quotation, would have said that the price that you've given us, we agree with you, we are going to give you a purchase order. You go and render service afterwards, give us an invoice so that we are able to pay you with the city. You get there, and a supplier, the invoice does not have a date. What training are you supposed to offer to the citizen with no date? You know, those are minimum things. But what you usually do, Shepherdson, my office will call the respective supplier and make them aware of why the invoice is not up to standard. But some of these things, I think it's attention to detail. It's sheer attention to detail, and I believe some of the suppliers, not like they are not doing business with government.
Yeah.
But we'll conduct workshops. We will conduct workshop. You know, like, I'm not sure what workshop we are going to conduct to teach people how to do this, to write this.
You must always whip your colleagues. Because when we are here, we want to hear you saying that, what have you done, explain and give them a capacity. Because a department does have a capacity. If they don't get it from you, they will remain not paid their dues, and you'll be on the list that you're not paying in time after 14 or 30 days. So be patient with our own people. Sometimes they are doing these things without having knowledge, so they need to be capacitated. It's not just a lighter thing.
Yeah, Chair, look, I think this issue of 40 days, we take it very, very serious. And that will attest by if we can make a graph for this committee to look at the sharp drop to where we are of the number of invoices by number, quantity, and also by value of how much the goods are that have not been paid after 30 days. You will then have to see. But I think the important thing, Chair, is that there is a risk involved as well. Because in risk management, those who have studied the subject, you will know that even the AG looks at that. If you pay too quickly, we must raise our eyebrows. Why? What's in it for you? Why are you paying so fast? So that's the first part. So I think, and because the question is, when did you take time? Like an invoice comes in today and then tomorrow you pay it.
there's a big problem there. We have to look at why. When did you get time to compare the purchase order, go through all the documents, check the validity of the signatures, check every other thing. So typically a fair period to wait is like a week, and then we process the invoice. Then we take it for granted. I mean, there are some people who have to receive the invoice, send it and put it there. After a week, they forward it to be paid because we want to be on their case and asking them why did they pay so big. But important thing is that the time frames are important. 30 days being the maximum, which we must not exceed. However, there's always been challenges. The issue the CFO raises are at the primary level. Just a sheer non-compliant invoice by virtue of what you see. But there are even more complex matters behind these issues. For instance, of where the goods received are not necessarily the goods as are on the order, you know. I'll give you an example of an invoice where a person was paid. What was ordered was a uni binder, and what was delivered was a ring binder. If you ask me, the difference in amount is so huge. One cost 500, the other cost 18,000. So, but the employee had goods receiving. Reads, it says binder, and the instrument, he reads the box, it says binder, and signs it off to say goods received in good condition. But what was ordered and what is delivered is not the same thing. In order to retrieve the money from someone who's already ate, it's a nightmare. So I think where the issues are not complex, we take time, honestly, to sort them out before we pay. So I always say to myself that then rather the treasury charges me, but I think we should not pay until we are satisfied that everything is in order, because the cost of retrieval becomes fruitless and wasteful expenditure, because the AG believes that we could have avoided that. There's also some other complex matter of people. Let me give you an example. I've asked me in the DG's forum, I don't know how many times, for a treasury to use a practice note. And the reason for this is that we get a report each and every forum of DG's. They are naming and shaming the departments that are not paying. My contribution to the debate among DG's was that the treasury must issue a practice note on how do we deal with all the odd circumstances pertaining to this. Because I'll give you an example of a person who, in terms of the process, they say, even if I see that on record his tax clearance certificate is going to expire in 2 days, but if he's the most competitive, he submitted the tender that is most competitive or the quotation is the cheapest, I must give the contract to the person. When I grant that person an order, 2 days later, this thing expires. When he delivers, now by the time it has expired, the process or the law say, the regulation say, I now can't pay him without a valid clearance certificate. But he has delivered and he has invoiced me. Because at the time I issued the order, the tax clearance was valid. But now it has expired. What do you do? And then this person says to you, no, look. And then they say we must say to the supplier, go to SARS and give us a tax clearance, and then only after then we must pay. But you know how many cases of such nature, because of the nature of our project, they take longer. From the time of delivery to the time of payment and invoicing, it's a fairly long period. So for many, the tax clearance certificate on record does expire. When you ask the treasury or you ask SARS, I say to them, if this man is DGG, the problem is that on our books we have an invoice that we have stamped it in good order. The date is there, the amounts are correct, everything with the invoice is right. There's nothing wrong with it except that the check clearance is expired. And they say if the invoice is proper like that, we have to stamp it. And we must start counting the dates when we have received it. And when it goes beyond 30 days, then we must report it and say here it is. So the CFO is correct, it's an exception. But then what do you do? Because the value of the contract and that invoice is there and you can't pay this person. So I've said to them, go to SARS, ask SARS to give us the tax clearance And I'm sorry to tell you that this person we can't issue because the company has not filed the returns and the company is owing. So now you can't pay that person. And then the person comes and please and say, Mr. DG, you have to pay me so that I can pay SARS. And so SARS can then release my tax clearance and then I can give it back to you. There's a year, I think 2013, I took a chance with this guy. He was so nice and he was pleading, saying, I will never mess you up, you know. I need this because this thing is also holding me up. Now I've also put my money to deliver your goods. And now I can't, oh please, pay me so I can pay SARS. SARS can give me this. I must also go and lock my money with the other department. You are the only one who can help me. And then I said, hey, I took a leap of faith. I said to the former CFO, pay this man. Chief, bring the tax clearance after your money gets cleared. Thereafter, he was not answering our calls. He had disappeared. We didn't get the tax clearance. It was a big issue. I had to sit down with the AG, explain how did I pay this one guy with this thing. And it was a big, big issue. So we don't take chances. So ultimately, you will find exceptions like that. On our reports, there will be incidences which are reported. But I think if you look at our performance, I mean, it's in a month, we don't have too many. We deal with a population of about 216 or so invoices. But if you look in 213 and you find that only two in a month have not been paid after 30 days, that should tell you that our commitment was doing the right thing. And equally, we don't hide anything. We volunteer all the information of everyone who has not paid, including an explanatory note why everyone has not been paid. So will you find we have chances of just an invoice neglected and ignored and not paid? No, I don't think so. If we have not paid, there is a good reason why we have not paid the person. Yes, it will still be reported that we have not paid, but that has to be. And immediately, when we pick up on this, what the CFO calls elementary stuff, if we pick up that your invoice has no date, they call you immediately to tell you that your invoice has no date. Please resubmit the invoice. But the good thing about those type of invoices are that they don't get reported. Why? Because the invoice is not in order, we have not sent it. So the counting has not begun. So the only problem are the ones that have secondary problems and that they attend to differently. So I think that's the context there.
Thank you for explanation, DG. Honorable members, we don't have any other time because the cutting off course, we're no longer having lunch in our meetings. We're on the road, 6 o'clock or 7, and we've been having fruitful discussions and the information that we want. I don't know. I need to be guided. We're still having one briefing, what do you say? And at 2 o'clock we have Leonard. I want guidance. Honorable Manu.
Thanks, Chair. I think we can just reserve the presentation when the DG comes in the next meeting. He will do the presentation. That's my... Yeah.
Any seconder?
From the chairman, I should second.
Let me take this opportunity to apologize to you, DG. I'm suspecting that because we want to be perfect when we're doing other things at this point, we lodged the agenda. Let's apologize to the department that you didn't finish. When you are going to come and prepare, you prepare for the whole meeting, but now we are running short of time. Let me take this opportunity to thank the department that you have taken your time listening to us, answering, advising in some other instances. We appreciate the DG and your colleagues. We're not going even to look at the minutes, honorable members. I want members to go and get something to eat. Some of the members are having
to prepare some other things for Elena, the meeting agent, I tell you.
Thank you, dear. All the documents. I'm so relieved.